Very nice. 720 WGN. It is Dane Neal in the Allstate Showcase Studio until 2 a.m. in for Patty on Pretty Late. I do have oftentimes guest and superstar channeler of the world, the universe of Harry Carey. You may do a little bit of that today as we talk some Cub convention.
I don't believe it. I don't know what you're talking about.
So, Dino Tiberi, to my right in the booth, we've got Tom Hush, and that's his real name. I had asked him when I first met him, you know, because in this business, Dino, I'm not sure if you're aware, but many times people aren't necessarily born with or given names that are conducive to a career in radio, so you must change your last name to Lightning, Thunder, right?
Or Hush.
Or Hush, right, the quiet man. So I think that's pretty cool. Anyway, so he'll be in the booth spinning the hits, and when there's a Ted Nugent song coming up, you can blame it or give credit to the one and only Tom Hush. So today on the show, Dino, it is jam-packed. We are going to have so many different things, and then we're going to talk a little bit of sports. Sports is going on. Congratulations to the mighty Blackhawks. It is a luxury to live in the greatest sports town in America.
A quick win tonight in overtime as they take out the Sabre 4-3. So it was good. Nice lead into our show tonight.
Yeah, and then we're going to talk some sports, some good moments as we reminisce and kind of bask in the afterglow of what was an amazing Cubs season. It's the season and the gift, right, that keeps on giving, because I still went on the way in today, and I knew you would be dressed in Cubs garb.
Of course. And
I would be too. Is that I'm still excited about it. And the the Cubs situation, the Wrigley situation, is being more things to more people as they're looking to maybe host one of the bowl games. It doesn't seem like it was a great place ever to have a football game, though it did a lot. But
yeah, well, the Bears played there many years ago, but of course when they had that Northwestern Illinois game, and I'm sure we could talk about that, but they had to have the everything run out of one end zone because it was too tight in the other end zone, so they're really playing on one side of the field because the one end zone was almost up against the brick wall.
I think you're going to see, whether it's concerts, Billy Joel just announcing that he's going to play there, I think, for the fourth consecutive year, a bunch of different shows there as the Ricketts family and the Cubs organization look to do more things with Wrigley Field, kind of have it be that economic engine, that kind of just place within that neighborhood that can be a gathering place for more than just Cubs baseball.
Absolutely. They're going to try to maximize their opportunities there as much as they can to bring in more revenue for the team and more revenue for the city.
We're going to talk to Chicago Tribune's Teddy Greenstein about that in just a couple minutes. Also in the program, keeping it a little bit in the sports theme, a disappointing and consistently disappointing end to another Bears season, as the Bears are not in what is called, Bears fans probably have lost touch with what it really means, but there's this hypothetical, mythical kind of gathering, and it's called the playoffs, right? Playoffs.
Yeah, they don't really know what that's been like for, what's it been, about 10 years now since they've been there last?
It seems
that way. I know in 2010 they were there, but it hardly seems like they've been there recently. It seems like a long time ago.
They do the playoffs every year, Dino, but most of the times the Bears
aren't
included. So it gives you an opportunity to focus on the other things that are fun in and around, the football watching experience, which is getting together with a bunch of friends, having some great snacks, having some, maybe some decorations for other teams, maybe placing some bets, perhaps.
Right. Well,
right?
You want to do that, but yeah, absolutely. Get together, get your friends together. I mean, the playoffs are a good time, and even though the Bears aren't playing, it's still entertaining to watch, and it's going to be a good weekend coming up.
You want to enjoy that. We're going to talk some of the games, but we're also going to talk home gating with tailgate guru Beth Peterson. She's going to join us at 11:30. And then after that, and Dino, you've been in a couple times with him. He is always a lot of fun, is Adam Rank from the NFL Network. He doesn't, pull any punches when it comes to his opinions based on the football season.
Yeah, I don't think subtle is in his vocabulary. He comes right out there and tells you like it is, and he's a good listener. There's no question about it.
And I think so. His review of the Bears season could be, in a word, scathing. Who knows?
Yeah.
But he'll definitely give his opinion plus his thoughts on the other game straight from the Oracle, from the NFL Network. And then we are going to talk some other things, maybe some Celebrity Apprentice. Maybe we're going to talk farming for fish, kind of feeding, staying alive and doing good things.
Sure.
All those kind
sounds
of things.
Sounds great.
Yeah, it's going to be great. So stay tuned. We're going to have all those things. We come back, we'll talk to Teddy Greenstein about Wrigley Field being the home for bowl games in college football. It's Dane here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Dane Neal here, Allstate Showcase Studio in Fort Patty until 2 a.m. And, Dino, we'll talk Cubs on a regular basis, and it's great to talk about them when you know they've won a world championship, won a World Series, and you're looking at it's always been, right, as great as some of those players on the field have been and their accomplishments, Wrigley Field is as big a star as any one of the players ever have been, right? It's an iconic venue. It is one of those places that I don't care what sport you're into or not into, that you need to make a pilgrimage to Wrigley Field at some point in your lifetime.
Well, it's a landmark. It's a destination, and people come in from all over to just to see the park. And, of course, when they're successful as they were last year, it's even better.
Draws millions of fans and some championship baseball. Also, some great concerts. If you could see your favorite band in that setting, is something you definitely want to do. And now coming up, you're going to be able to see probably and hopefully important bowl games happening there. To talk a little bit about that is the Chicago Tribune's very own. We're honored to have him on the line with us. Teddy Greenstein, welcome to WGN.
Hey, Dane. How are you guys? What's going on?
We're doing good. This is exciting stuff. You know, whenever you can find different ways to make Wrigley Field part of the conversation, you got to be excited. We saw Northwestern play the Pinstripe Bowl out at Yankee Stadium. It's cool to see these venues kind of being used and in those settings. And so Wrigley's going to join that crowd.
It's so true. I mean, it's nice to be able to talk about, you know, the Cubs and Wrigley Field in January. Outside of the Cubs convention, and I think for a lot of fans, it'd be cool to go to Wrigley Field, you know, in late December. It'll be chilly, of course, assuming they get a bowl game there. But, you know, I was there in 2010 when Northwestern played Illinois, and it was way cool. I mean, just stuff you never see, you know, field goals that get kicked into the bleachers, and, you know, one of the goalposts is basically, like, painted into the side, so... Wrigley, of course, hosted football for many years, and I think it's you know, it would be a great thing if they can host a bowl game. You know, especially if you can have a Big Ten team there. You know, if you got Wisconsin or Iowa or Michigan State. I mean, you know, a lot of great fan bases. Chicago, of course.
On paper, it sounds like something really great. You mentioned up a couple of challenges, though, is that, you know, it's this old venerable place that never was built for football, so you've got to make some compromises on what you can do with the field size-wise, too. And some of these bowls, you know, you can bring in lots of people. You look at some of those larger stadiums, you just can't fit as many people. How are they going to address it? I saw in your story, they're going to find a way to you know, take care of that end zone issue, at least.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, in terms of the size of the field, I mean, the Cubs really say that even in 2010, if they'd been given a few weeks' notice, they could have accommodated. They could have basically moved the wall along the third base line if they'd been given some time. But at the point, you know, 48 hours before, when the Big Ten and Northwestern came in and said, whoa, there's not enough space here, then they kind of all freaked out and said, all right, what are our options? And the safest one was just to have, you know, both offenses go the same way. But they say it will not be a problem. The dugouts are going to be moved closer to the foul poles and there will be enough room. And, you know, in terms of attendance, I mean, if they can get 40,000 for this game, that would be probably drawing better than the average bowl, because you've got a lot now that, you know, you see them on TV. 18, 20,000, 30,000, 32,000, you know, so 40 is not much compared to, you know, what the Rose Bowl gets, but 40,000 is a good crowd for a mid-level bowl.
What the Pinstripe Bowl, what was the attendance at that game?
It was 37 and change. That game is drawn between like 36 and 47,000 over the years.
You know, given Chicago fans something else to do in December, you know, I think that place will fill itself up pretty fast between the two teams and the people here, their alumni, hopefully, of the, you know, whoever gets picked for that. I'm sure they won't have a problem filling it up.
Well, and not only that, it's like people have to keep this in mind. You know, when you host a bowl game, the players and a lot of the fans are here 4 or 5 days, and that's tourism dollars. And it's really good for those kids who are going to be going to places like, you know, when the Obama Library opens and places along Michigan Avenue and the Art Institute. And, you know, a lot of people don't, you know, they think of the student athletes as just players. Like, they don't think that, hey, you know, this would be a good enriching experience for them. But it really would be. And, you know, if, let's again say, like, you know, Iowa's in this game, you got to think, all right, the Iowa fans are going to be pumped up. Maybe they want to spend a few days here, spend some money in the restaurants and hotels, and that's certainly a good thing for Chicago any time of year.
Well, and you hit on it too. I mean, Chicago is a place, it's a better place to be than, let's say, Birmingham, Alabama, or you know, Orlando, Florida, or any of these places where the Bulls are, and they're all draws no matter what. And before we got you on the air, you know, we talked about, you know, Wrigley Field is as big a star as any of the players. So I got to think that, and you mentioned a mid-level bowl, maybe it won't, you know, have the, I guess, the impact as far as, you know, who's going to win a national championship, but it'll be one of those really desirable places to be, I think, right from the get-go.
Yeah, I mean, that's all still to be determined, and I think a lot of it is based on, you know, how much the Cubs want to invest, what kind of a title sponsor they can get, what kind of a TV partner they can get. I mean, if you're starting this bowl, you don't want to be on the bottom of the rung. You know, like right now, there's a bowl in Detroit called the Quick Lane Bowl. And, yeah, it's tied into the Big Ten. And the game it had was Boston College against Maryland. It's like, whoa, that was terrible. You want to be at least somewhere in the middle so you're getting, you know, maybe an 8-4 team. I mean, Pinstripe worked out beautifully. I mean, Northwestern was just 6-6. Pitt was 8-4, had beaten Clemson. And it ended up being a super game. So, you know, if you're going to have Wrigley, you know, you want to have, you know, you want to have teams. You're not going to get the best teams, but you want to have good teams there.
Maybe you can do like a second tier, or kind of, I mean, I don't know how much leverage or control anybody has in this, but maybe if you did make one of those teams kind of a second tier Big Ten kind of consolation prize thing. It's not the Rose Bowl, but right. And that, I think, would make where you'd have kind of indigenous fan base for it from the get-go, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, warm weather bowls are great. I've been to many of them. But what are the activities? Okay, you go to Busch Gardens or you go to Dave and Buster's. I mean, again, all that's fun. We love Dave and Buster's.
Ski,
you know,
ball.
We love the beach. But, yeah, but, like, think about, I mean, when Northwestern and Pitt, when those guys were in New York, you know, they went to, like, St. Pat's Cathedral. They went to the 9/11 Memorial Museum. They went to Wall Street. You know, they did stuff that is like lifetime experiences. 70% of Northwestern players had never been in New York. So in terms of stuff like that, it was a total reward for the players and something they'll always remember.
You know, and also the history of, you know, Wrigley Field. You've had all the Bears games back in the 70s. They could say they played on the same field as a Gale Sayers or a, you know, Dick Butkus. But I think, you know, the way the Bulls are tied in right now with the, you know, the Big Ten, with the various leagues in the Big Ten, and it's probably going to take a little while for that them to get a decent matchup in there. I know you're mentioning the game in Detroit, which is, it's one of those ones I just cross off because I don't think I've ever watched one of those games. But,
yeah.
You know, this one's got a draw because of the venue, and, you know, that's a big thing. Plus, all around Wrigley Field, by the time they're going to put this together, all the improvements will be done. That hotel will be there. So there's going to be a lot of opportunities for people coming in from out of town to come in and see a lot of stuff.
Exactly. And that's the part that I hadn't really thought of until I talked to Crane Kenny. And he's like, guess what? Guess what this is going to look like in 2020? You're going to have the Hotel Zachary. You're going to have all these restaurants, this plaza. So, you know, it's great to see all that stuff get used 12 months a year. And I live in the neighborhood. Yeah, if you're the Hotel Zachary, absolutely. You want to be selling out, you know, 12 months a year, and you want to breathe life into that area when it's non-baseball season.
Well, you mentioned the plaza there, and do you have any information on the latest there? I mean, we're seeing, if you've been down there and if listeners have gotten down to kind of Wrigleyville, you know, in the last, you know, X amount of 6 months or whatever, I mean, it's like a war zone over there. There's so much going on, and if you look at some of the models or the kind of the artist renditions, it's going to be pretty amazing, you know, when it's done. But on that plaza side, that is going to be really, really cool, right? It's going to be an attraction for the community. They're thinking, you know, ice skating, different events, concerts.
Right.
But I know that, the you know, as always, there's some kind of pushback from certain parts of the neighborhood. What's the latest on that?
I mean, just class. And I live at Clark and Irving. I mean, I'm, you know, an
right
apron walk to the plaza. I am right there. And I mean, yeah, I get one guy emails me today. He's like, oh, this is the worst. I mean, you know, it's going to be so noisy at night and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, first of all, they're not going to be night games. I mean, we're talking about, like, Northwestern will play there maybe twice out of every three seasons, and it'll probably be an 11 a.m. kick or 2:30 at the latest. And obviously the bowl game is not going to be played at night. They're not going to have a night game in late December.
Seven below.
So he's like, well, I live two blocks away, and when they had that football game there, it was noisy at 6 a.m. It's like, dude, then don't live two blocks from Wrigley Field.
Yeah,
I mean,
come on.
These people are so cranky. I mean, there's a lot of places to live in this world and in Chicago away from Wrigley if you can't handle a little noise.
If they're really worried about the noise then, what are they doing now? I mean, all you hear, all you see is construction crews and people coming in and out of there. I mean, you know, if that's going to bother them down, you know, in 2020 when everything's going to be finished, I don't know what they're doing now.
I was only sad that the McDonald's left. I mean, that was the biggest loss for me, but apparently the Mickey D's will be back in the plan, so I'm satisfied.
Right.
Teddy, how do you just chalk that up to, you know, it takes a village and there's going to be certain people, no matter what it is, that, you know, that are not going to be happy about whatever it is? Because I think generally, and you can kind of do that, give us with your hand on the pulse of the neighborhood there, are people genuinely excited? It's got to be if you're living there, right? So you know that, you know, this is happening and the Cubs are there, and it's really a positive thing in so many ways for everybody that's there. Is everyone generally excited, or are they, I mean, it's change, right?
Yeah, I mean, that really was the only email that I got, and I'm sure, you know, the Cubs deal with it, Tom Tunney deals with it, and you know, I'm sure that there should be a balance. Look, I mean, the Cubs are having a lot of concerts. To me, the more the merrier. I mean, I can hear the music from my place. I'm not so close that, you know, that I have people, you know, I don't know, peeing in front of my house.
I didn't want to say that, but I'm glad you went there.
Yeah, right. That's what we always think about. So for me, it's perfect. And I guess, yeah, maybe if you moved here 20 years ago, you didn't sign up for concerts and various things. But, you know, the flip side is your property values have gone up so much that you could sell your place and
move on out
to a more quiet, location. You know, I did a story a month or so ago about, you know, Tiger Woods is going to be designing this golf course on the south side, Jackson Park and South Shore. And that's a tricky one because, you know, you have people who have gladly played Jackson Park and South Shore for 10 or 20 bucks for years. And now, you know, they're going to be shutting it down, and it's certainly going to be more expensive, but hopefully not that much more expensive. So you can understand, you know, why some people in the neighborhood aren't thrilled with it. But look, I mean, if these kind of projects are done well, virtually everyone benefits.
It's a good thing. It is a good thing. A lot of good things are happening, as well as all the good stuff that you're bringing to the Chicago Tribune. So we love what it is you do. And before we let you go, how can people follow you, keep up with all your adventures with the Tribune and social media?
Twitter handle at Teddy Greenstein. Give me a follow. And of course, check out the Tribune. You know, the story ran today on the web. A little bit nice display tomorrow in the paper. So hopefully there's still a few people who actually buy real newspapers out there.
All right, Teddy.
Got one right here.
We love what you do. And thanks for jumping on the phone tonight.
My pleasure, guys. Enjoyed it. Have a great night.
Take care.
All right. We're going to come back and send it to the news in just a second. But right now, quick break. It's Dane on 720 WGN. I don't want you. 720 WGN, Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio, right here on a cold, chilly, wintry, Michigan Avenue.
It's cold.
Dino Tiberi to my right, also feeling the cold. He has his long sleeve Cubs World Series shirt on to protect him from the elements. But nothing can protect the Bears from the elements better than just losing and staying home and not having to go out there and play in what could be a cold day.
Saved a lot of Chicagoans, a lot of problems at Soldier Field.
Right. There's just no frostbite situations. Right. It's a public service, maybe.
3-13. I don't know if I'd call it a public service. I just call it lousy.
Well, football fans still enjoy watching football, even if maybe their favorite team or the team they root for isn't involved in well, the playoffs are going on. You know, they're going to have them anyway. They're going to cancel them just because the Bears aren't participating. And on the line with us now is going to show us the best way to enjoy the playoffs, a Bear-free playoff. She is a lifestyle expert. She's a world recipe champion. She is a tailgate guru. And when you take the tailgate and you bring it inside, it's called home gating. It's the one and only Beth Peterson. Welcome to WGN.
Hey, guys. Thank you. Yes, that's right. We're staying inside for tailgating this time around because, you know, we don't have to go out to Soldier Field and freeze and tailgate. We get to stay in and have fun and watch the game on TV and really ramp up our tailgate because you can have a lot of fun with tailgating at home. You can do a lot more, I think.
Well, here's the thing, too, is there are so many elements of sports can be a heartbreaker. You know this, right? You know, it can be one of those things that can it can break your heart. It can leave you crying. It can make you sad, right? But the one thing based around sports that always delivers and makes you feel good is that you have a couple beers or some beverages or whatever. You can have some great snacks. You can really enjoy yourself, have some friends over and do some things. So, Beth, if people are going to set up their own home gating situation, what can you do to kind of replicate you do whatever you can, I guess, to replicate the excitement of a tailgate experience, except have it in your own home?
Well, so some of the fun things that you can do that are a little more difficult to do when you have to take it on the road is you can set up like more elaborate, bars full of a lot of different kinds of foods. So one of the things that I love to do is something called the Spud Bar. And everybody loves it. It's so hearty on a cold winter Chicago afternoon watching a game. And it's mashed potatoes, it's baked potatoes, and then like all of the toppings for those. And you can't really do that. You can't really bring that out to Soldier Field. I mean, you can, but, it's a lot of work. So this is great because you can just do it in the comfort of your own home, and it's such a centerpiece for when people come in, to watch the game, to kind of stand around the bar, fill up, their mashed potatoes full of like chili and top it with bacon, mac and cheese. You can get really creative and have a lot of fun with the toppings.
Now, Beth, obviously the Super Bowl is the granddaddy of all of the partying.
That's the Rose Bowl.
Right. Well, so is that. But anyway, this is just being the wild card round of the playoffs. We ramp it up each week? Like this week, we start out with the Spud Bar, as you mentioned there, and then, next week the next divisional round starts, and then you try something totally different, or do you stick with some of the staples each time, or do you radically just change it?
I think that you add to it, and I think that there are going to definitely be some staples in there, right? Like, I think like wings, like every single game, we always have wings. It's just part of it, right? But I do some different things with the wings. Like I have something called a black satin, and I call it the black and gold satin sticky wing. And like, you know what's great about these is that you really don't want to bring these out to Soldier Field because they're so messy. They're like, you literally need to have like wet wipes with you when you eat these. They're delicious, but like you know they're everywhere. So these are great to have at home because and they're really great like right out of the oven and really hot. So so wings are a staple for sure. We can do different things though with the wings every week, and I definitely think you got to ramp it up. I definitely think you've got to amp up your game every single week to the Super Bowl, to the big day.
People are going to expect more, Beth. You're right, because it's the first round, the divisional. It's just like you got to get in there. It's one of those stepping stone games towards the Super Bowl. So I think if you're going to maybe kind of ramp it up and have the home gating for the Super Bowl, you got to have a halftime show. You got to have some entertainment. Maybe a holographic John Madden doing a breakdance routine. So let's talk about what do you do? Okay, you got the food, and we're going to get into a couple of the recipes before we let you go. But what do you do decoration wise? Do you do that where you kind of have maybe streamers or
cardboard cutout of something?
Right, a Jim McMahon fat head up on the wall. Who knows?
For sure. You can totally ramp up the decor for sure because, you want to get the feel of, kind of being out there and tailgating. So you definitely want to get all of your the plates and the napkins and the all of the colors of your team. And the other thing is that I like to do something called a snack stadium. Oh, I don't know, guys, if you've ever seen these before, right?
I've seen them before. Yeah. Describe for the listeners what it is, because it is an awe-inspiring thing of edible beauty.
It is. It can be, it doesn't have to be daunting. It doesn't have to be overwhelming because you can pretty much buy everything that goes into a snack stadium. But basically what it is, it's the stadium constructed out of various different snacks. How fantastic is that?
Wow, that sounds
terrific. When your guests walk in and they see that you've created this masterpiece of a snack stadium with sandwiches and chips and dip and guacamole and all that kind of thing, they go crazy. It's amazing. So I would say the Snack Stadium is like this ultimate thing that would be great for Super Bowl.
For the Super Bowl, right. You wouldn't want to have it for the for some of these earlier games where you'd have that Snack Stadium kind of replicate the excitement at let's say, a Soldier Field. So there'd be empty seats in the Snack Stadium, disillusioned sandwiches and sad kind of droopy chips.
Exactly. You can do a smaller one. You can maybe do, like, I've done, like, a little dessert Snack Stadium, and it's a little bit smaller, and, you know, maybe you could do that starting maybe mid-season. But, like, you want to, you know, really wow people on Super Bowl Sunday. I think that a Snack Stadium, creating one of those for your guests would be a great thing to do.
You mentioned the Spud Bar. That's great. You got potatoes. It is one of the kind of the major food groups when it comes to parties. And then you think chips. And chips, not all chips are created equal. You know, and you've got some chips and some dips and some things like that. So what do you recommend as far as chips and dips that can hold up over time and really satisfy when it comes to a game day?
Okay. So one of my favorite chip dip kind of ideas is to do a hot blue cheese sauce on just regular, like, kettle chips. It's so delicious, and people will be, like, licking the plate. It's so fantastic. And basically, it's blue cheese and cream and some butter and some chives. I mean, it's, like, it's a very, very easy recipe to make. And then just, like, a bag of chips, and you just pour the blue cheese sauce over the chips, and people go crazy for it.
Any kind of specific chips, or just you're running?
She said kettle chips.
Kettle chips.
Yeah, the kettle chips, because they hold up with the dip, with the cheese sauce on top of it.
You got to have chips with
a
little bit of muscle.
A little heartier chip.
Yeah, you got to have chips with a little bit of muscle. We're going to get to, when we come back from this break, we're going to get to some of the places where you can find some of those recipes, a couple other snacks in there, and then we're going to get into the beverage and cocktail side, because it's one thing to fill up. You know, you need to wash it down with something.
Right, and Bloody Mary always sounds good to me.
Yeah, well, so the Bloody Mary, that's an easy one. We'll definitely talk a little bit about that, but also
for sure,
maybe some cocktails and some game-themed beverages that can go along with all of the delicious snacks that can go along with maybe the excitement or maybe the disappointment that happens on the screen. That can happen. It can do whatever it wants. You can guarantee an action-packed event inside your stomach.
Absolutely.
Right? And your living room when you're doing some home gating. So we've got Beth Peterson on the line. We'll be back with her in just a second talking playoff snacks and home gating. It's Dane here on 720 WGM. I'm really digging the tunes. It's a little Joe Walsh here.
And, doesn't have to be old to be a classic, Dane.
720 WGN, Dane Neal here, Allstate Showcase Studio in for Patty on Pretty Late. I do have Dino Tiberi to my right, Tom Hush. And Tom, you had somebody who texted in saying that the nickname for your nickname would be the Quiet Storm.
Quiet Storm.
I'll have to write that one down.
Just get it embroidered on the back of all your jerseys.
Oh, no doubt.
When it comes to jerseys, you want to suit up, right? You know, when you're home gating at home, you're going to watch your. I kind of like to. I don't like to suit up entirely. I won't wear the football pants
no
and the helmet
or the helmet, right? Right, or the mouth guard. It's tough to eat when you have one of those.
It's
in there.
It's tough, but you maybe wear like a kind of a team themed T-shirt.
Yeah,
or
you
something.
Can wear a jersey or a shirt. Yeah, there's a lot of different. Fashion options you could bring into it. Why not get in there and do your part?
Anytime you're wearing a specific outfit, you want to be careful you don't get any dips or anything on it. So you want a team issued bib to go along. at least I would do it. Anyway, she's got all of the things that you need in order to have the amazing home gating experience to enjoy as best you can your Bear Free playoffs this year. Beth Peterson is back on the line. Beth, welcome back.
Hey guys.
Hey.
Yes, I do. And definitely, we don't need a mouth guard while we're tailgating, because we cannot get down any of the delicious food that we're making or sip the fantastic cocktails.
So the mouth guard or the mouth-related apparatus that you could bring to this would
no
be
good.
A silly straw.
Yeah, no.
Right, exactly.
Silly straw.
From the 920, somebody had texted in, which gave me a suggestion. Oftentimes, when it's an entertaining scenario, even though there's a sporting event that's the central element, you know, you don't always have to watch the, you know, the Super Bowl. Yes, the commercials are there and you want to watch them
sure.
all. But someone had suggested just watch reruns of Saturday Night Live with the Bears. Now, Beth, if you've got an extra TV in there and maybe not everybody wants to watch football the entire time, do you have alternative programming sometimes available?
I think I haven't done that, but I think that's a great idea.
Maybe Shawshank Redemption idea. Is on or something. What do you got, Dino?
I don't know about that.
You got to show the greatest team in the history of Chicago, the 1985 Bears Super Bowl win.
There you go.
That's it.
So
I like that.
So
that's great.
The present day is underwhelming. You can find the glory. Yeah. The historical glory of the past. And so we had talked before we went to the break. We talked about some of the different snacks, the chips, the, you know, the dips and the wings. And it left a giant thing that I think is an essential ingredient to anything fun is, of course, those beverages, right? And some signature
right.
cocktails. How do you build in a sports theme to the drinks that are going to be available?
Okay, so definitely this is a very important area. First of all, you know, beer. I think that beer is like what the number one beverage you have to have. And one of the fun things that I like to do is have a lot of variety of different beers for beer tasting. So I do the little kegs, the mini kegs,
like a pony keg. Yeah.
And I do like a pony, the smallest one that you can get. And
the micro keg.
The micro keg. I'm
just joking. I'm not sure if that's really a thing.
I think they're called quarter barrels. I think that's what they're called. Of different kinds of beer, and people can sample, do beer tasting. And I do probably about four or five different kinds, and it's really fun. People get a chance to try different beer, and it's a fun way for, you know, people to have conversation and talk about it. And, you know, beer is such a big thing right now. And so, you know, doing all sorts of specialty beers is fun.
Yeah. You have a couple craft beers, some really cool ones, different varieties, whether you're IPAs or your porters. And, of course, have some of your, you know, those general beers that normally people consume in large quantities. I think maybe have a big tub of Bud Light or something like that.
Yeah, right. Miller Light, either one. The domestic beers are usually a hit. At most parties.
Right.
So, Beth, do you also have, for those people that want to have maybe something a little sweeter or maybe something with a fun side to it, do you have a bowl of punch or maybe some shooters, maybe some hurricanes, some Mai Tais, I mean, some drinks that can go along with it, can add a little
a
bit of
punch.
Festivity.
I like the idea of a tailgate punch. That sounds fun. there's so many things. Okay, well, first of all, we talked a little bit about the Bloody Mary. And
fantastic.
Again, kind of getting back to doing sort of more of an elaborate setup because you're in your home, you can do a Bloody Mary bar and yep. people can, you know, add all of their different accoutrements to their Bloody Mary and make it their own. But some of the ideas is starting with tequila and doing a Bloody Maria. And one of the things I like to do is infuse the tequila with dried chili before, like the day before. And it actually changes the color of the tequila. It's kind of cool look. And I put a picture of it out and so people know that they're drinking something that's a little bit spicy, already starting out, you know, the Bloody Mary with a, you know, a spicy tequila and make a Bloody Maria out of it. And, you know, putting, you know, they're pretty spicy. They're really delicious. And then, you know, all different kinds of toppings for, you know, things to put into your Bloody Mary is really a fun thing to do. So there's that. Do you guys love Bloody Mary?
Yeah,
absolutely.
And it is cool when you can set up that bar where you get people, you know, they get creative and interactive and kind of a craft element to it, or they can add their own celery stalk and have some bacon in a jar there.
Sure.
They can add their own.
All kinds of stuff you can throw in those.
You
things.
Mentioned the accoutrements, right, that you can add to the thing. So I think that's good. Before we let
right.
you go, Beth, it's one thing if you're hosting it yourself. We've got a lot of great tips in there. You know, Dino, if you're going to travel to someplace else, you're gonna bring maybe a snack of your own if there's something that you really like that may not be at the place. So, Beth, Dino, what do you bring first off?
Well, you can bring, if we're talking about alcoholic things, how about some Jello shots or maybe some drunken gummies you can bring along?
When your
team scores, you fire in some gummies every time they score. Could be an interesting
Love
afternoon
it.
At that point. But if we're talking snacks, you know me, Dane, during the playoffs, I was a Geno's pizza roll guy. So any kind of snack works. It's, you know, it's to me, you know, anything, pretzels, you know, you, whatever you think, just whatever you think you can bring that'll enhance the party. That's the way I look at
just
it.
Just enter the front door with a stiff arm and the bag.
That's right. And whatever. Yeah, right.
The
just
box
get
of
out of
Geno's.
My way. I'm going right to the Bloody Mary bar.
So, Beth, what do you think from as far as the customs and maybe the etiquette standpoint, what is something people should bring if they're going to a playoff party?
Sure, you got to bring something, right? And I always think it's great to bring a bottle of something. Great to bring, you know, some liquor to add to the party. And then also, you know, if you're going to go with an appetizer, go with something that's all like already ready. You know, that you don't have to finish off when you get there. Something that's ready, warm, that you can just open up and put out, so that you don't have to assemble anything when you get there.
In fact, you can finish half of it on the way up to the front door.
That's right.
Bottle of Mad Dog 2020. Yeah. Kick the enemy party a kick.
She is a tailgating guru and a home gating guru as well, telling us how to best enjoy our Bears-free playoff games coming up this weekend, the first of what will be weeks of Bears-free playoff football action.
Unfortunately. Actions. Hopefully we get those Bears in the playoffs soon.
Yeah, even in like a commercial or something. No, I'm just kidding. So, Beth, how can people keep up with you? Where can they find some of these recipes, and where can they follow you on social media?
Okay, well, you can find me at Beth Peterson online, and it's just BethPeterson.online, or you can find me at Beth's Table on Twitter and Instagram and on Facebook.
Sounds good. Beth, thanks so much. I know you're getting in there to go ahead and prepare the ultimate setup, and thanks for jumping on the show tonight.
Absolutely, guys. Have a great night.
You too. Thanks, Beth.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll send it to news. But right now, it's Dane on 720 WGN. Hey, 720 WGN, Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio, Michigan Avenue. Cold. Dino Tiberi to my right, Tom Hush. In the booth as we are on the verge, the eve of yet another Bears-free playoff season. And a guy on the line with us that we always love having on, and he spent some of his portion of his formative years in the Chicagoland area. So he has been afflicted with a condition known as a Bears fan, as of course he's there with all the other teams at the NFL Network, the one and only Adam Rank. Welcome to WGN.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Forgive me if I'm mistaken from what I was listening to, not about me being from Chicago and all that. Did they say that the weather was it's 4 degrees?
It's cold.
Yeah. Celsius, what's going on?
4 degrees, right, the number. And then 14 below is the wind chill, so a balmy night here in Chicago.
I thought I was mishearing that. I'm not used to it. I mean, granted, we've had some rain out in California, so believe me, I can empathize. But 4 just seems a little excessive.
Well, don't you ever break out the family photos? Maybe a young child, you know, Adam Rank in a giant snowsuit and maybe a Schaumburg parking lot somewhere with some snow, and you say, "Yeah, good decisions by the family."
You know, that's a great memory. Yeah, we were living in Schaumburg, and I do actually have like photos of us in the snow and everything like that, which is pretty much what my dad's thinking was. Is once he got out of the Navy, he's like, okay, we don't have to live here anymore, right? We're out. So
time to go.
So, yes, great decision. I'm thanking him all the time.
You can pick up and you can leave, but oftentimes your loyalties to your certain team are more difficult to shake than maybe the locale. And for Bears fans here, you know, they had the end of the season press conference, and Coach John Fox talked about, you know, just all the things that teams go through, is, you know, losing. I guess this was, and the Bears have had some really bad teams. This is one of those, if not the maybe statistically worst season that they've had, right? And so injuries, how do you from afar assess the Bears situation?
You know, this will probably seem strange, but I didn't think it was as bad as people will make it out to be. And I know being granted the third overall selection says that it wasn't a great season. But I thought, like, talent-wise, I thought this team was going to make a push. I thought there was going to be some opportunities. But unfortunately, for me, it just looked like there was a lot of injuries that overtook it. But the one thing you want to see when your team finishes so poorly is there something to have hope for going into next season. I think off the top of my head, right off the bat, Jordan Howard would be number one. Cameron Meredith looks like he can be a legit number one wide receiver. So in case Alshon is not invited back, I think that there'll be guys there who are able to pick up the slack there. And I know Zach Miller will return, hopefully healthy next year. And on the defensive side, I thought there were some nice pieces. You're like looking at it, you're like, okay, and Fangio's going to stay. They're going to keep the system. They're not going to do anything crazy. So if they go into the draft and hopefully, you know, somebody above them makes the mistake of drafting one of the quarterbacks, or maybe both quarterbacks go off the board. Actually, I don't even know if there's a definitive number one quarterback who will go off, but let's say somebody takes a quarterback, which allows us to take, and I say us, I'm sorry, that's rude, but
you suit it up at some point.
But if we get the Texas A&M kid or the guy from Alabama, I think we're in pretty good shape, and I think that the Bears are going to be poised to surprise some people next season.
Yeah, you know, with all the injuries they had, Adam, they did get hit pretty hard and on both sides of the ball, and then, of course, you throw in a couple of four-game suspensions for performance-enhancing drug use as well, so that didn't really help out too well as far as the continuity. But the quarterback situation, as always in Chicago, is just a mess. And to me, do you see them taking a quarterback in the first couple of rounds? Not necessarily in the first or second, maybe, but maybe a third-round quarterback? Because they have not drafted a quarterback since, I can't even remember, since this new regime's been in there, they haven't drafted one. It's been quite a while in a higher round than, like, seventh. So maybe it's time that they look to the future because, as far as I know, Matt Barkley and the other quarterbacks that they had on the field this year just couldn't get it done.
No, you probably are going to want to draft somebody that you can develop. I think the last quarter, forgive me, I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody. It's like Kyle Orton in the fourth round back in 2005? Was that, honestly, I mean, I'm not joking around.
Yeah, it's statistically one of the better quarterbacks in Bears history.
Right.
If he would have started, I always say, if he would have started the Super Bowl, they probably would have won. And I work with Reggie Wayne, and so I always tell him, I'm like, you realize you were super lucky. Like, Rex Grossman had more to do with you winning a Super Bowl than Peyton Manning. You know that, right?
Well, that's why Rex got a ring from that. I mean, did the Colts give him a ring
when they have I thought I was so upset when they had that ceremony to commemorate the 10-year. The 10-year anniversary of that, I'm like, was Rex there? Like, he should have been.
Well, I think they
been invited.
Right. I think they do reward contributors at all sorts of different levels.
I think he got picked off on the way into the stadium. They pulled him out of traffic.
Well, Adam is
that was the worst. I don't know how. Like, and I don't. I mean, I get it because you're a competitor, and would like to think that you would have won that game. But I mean, like deep down, like you know, you would have lost. The Colts can delude themselves with any story like, hey, they ran a cover two. We knew. I'm like, okay, I get the theory of that, but you realize that Peyton Manning statistically is about as good as a Bears quarterback once he gets in the playoffs. So it's not great. So, but that all being said, I think there was a serious question here, and it's about the quarterback. I do think, I think when you look at the way the NFL is kind of evolving, and there's a handful of guys who are considered elite quarterbacks, Tom Brady, I suppose Aaron Rodgers or whatever. But, I mean, most of these teams just build with a strong defense and don't spend a lot of resources on the quarterback position because once you start giving those quarterbacks big money, it really kind of hamstrings you with things that you're able to do. And I guess the Bears would be a kind of an example of that. With all the money they had to give to Jay Cutler, that means you lose guys like Matt Forte and Brandon Marshall and Julius Peppers. And you know, there's Chris Conte. Okay, maybe not Chris Conte, but
not Chris Conte.
I swear to God.
Oh, I just,
that Tampa Bay game. I don't wager any money or anything like that, but I'm like, if there's one game the Bears were going to – I thought the Bears would go 15-1 this year. And I go, the one game they're going to lose is to Chris Conte and the Buccaneers. I just know it. But anyway, I think if you invest early in the defense, which is coming along, perhaps helping out the offensive line too, and I think that offensive line is going to be a definite strength. I mean, when Sitton's going to be healthy and Kyle Long – Just following him on Twitter, seems like he's going to be healthy. Get the center back. Like, oh, there's a lot of cool stuff going on. So if you invest in the lines and on the defense, and then go into the fourth round, third or fourth round, take a guy. And I'm not saying this guy. I'll let the scouts go out and do their due diligence and identify the player they want to pick. But as a college football fan, I see Chad Kelly as the kind of like that kind of guy who had a pretty good college career, who's not getting a lot of accolades, but ends up being better in the pros than a lot of people are anticipating. So I see somebody of that ilk, like have a Chad Kelly come in, have him, compete with some of the veterans, whether you bring back Hoyer or Barkley or Cutler, whoever it is, just have him compete. Just keep one of those veterans around as a little bit of a stopgap, and then just try to develop a youngster and go from there.
And I wanted to ask you this question based on, as you can imagine, so many fans here of the Bears have just had kind of Jay Cutler fatigue. And although on paper and definitely on potential, he's the best option. When you look at it, when it comes to the field, fans are just kind of tired. They're kind of looking forward to maybe a fresh start in the end of the Jay Cutler era. What do you think is going to be the epitaph, the career stat tombstone for a Jay Cutler? Is he going to pull one of those kind of end of his career, like Doug Flutie moments, or Vinny Testaverde who came back and played some significant things? Or is he going to be kind of on the Jeff George pile of talent that never got where it really should have gone? What do you think is going to happen ultimately with Jay?
Well, I hope it's not a situation where we are romanticizing the past and being like, yeah, he wasn't as bad as we thought he was. Cause that would mean that the guys who came after him weren't very good. And I just, I think right now, because, it's too soon, it's too soon to move on. But I think it's just going to be the case of one of those guys who just has all the talent in the world, but for whatever reason, wasn't able to get it done. And I think I'm a bigger fan of Jay Cutler than most people. And I think that, he did a lot of nice things on the field. And you know what? It just didn't work out. Unfortunately, that's the way it goes. And it's really tough, because as you said, I think the Bears looking for a quarterback is something that I can share with my parents and grandparents, and it goes all the way back. I mean, it's a rite of passage for any Chicago Bears fan. You lived through an era where it's like, yeah, we need a quarterback, and it's just something that my dad went through forever, and then I'm going through, and it's just, and hopefully – my young daughter can live in an era where, she doesn't have to ever think about that again. But it's been at the same time, I think we've been very blessed at the running back position. And you look at Walter Payton, Gale Sayers. I'll put Neil Anderson in there. I thought he was a very good running back. Forte, who is my favorite guy. And then, of course, looking at some of the guys that we have on the team now, with Jordan Howard being the number one guy, you're like, okay, so we made up for it another era. So I just hope that at some point we can move past it. I would like to get to a point. I would like to have that moment too. Let's say, where they draft a guy, he comes in, finally get back over the hump, you win, and you can come back and kind of embrace Jay and be like, it wasn't that bad. It wasn't all your fault. I think he could have been surrounded with a little bit of better talent and things like that over the last couple of years. But I think right now it's just too soon. It's like, yeah, it's a fresh breakup. Like, we can be Facebook friends at some point, maybe 5 years down the road, it'll be fine. We'll see each other at Starbucks or Potbelly Deli or whatever and be like, hey, Jay, it's great to see you.
Yeah, you're looking good.
Doing well. Yeah. Like, you're looking great. Hope the kids are good. But right now, it's like, you know what? We might need a little bit of space.
I was kind of thinking maybe they were going to build a statue of him throwing off his back foot. There goes an out, and there goes the ball, and they're run, and Chris Conte running it in the other way for a touchdown. Boy, that there's nothing worse than seeing that after all his struggles there in Chicago, and have Conte go in there and pick that pass off and run it in for a touchdown. That would made that was horrible.
Okay, yeah, and Conte was not a great NFL player compared to other guys. Better than me, but not great compared to other players. I still, listen, the Randall Cobb one, I will defend him and be like, that one really wasn't his fault, because if Peppers would have been able to get to Rodgers, it would have been fine, but then the Bears would have won, and then Trestman would have gotten more years, and who knows what would have happened. I don't know, so maybe it ended up being for the best, but that one is like the only one where I have to stop people. That one kind of wasn't his fault. It was a 4th-and-8, like, you don't want the guy, but then he's like, you probably shouldn't let him get past you. But you know what? If they get
to, that small little detail there, Adam.
To his quarterback, well, if the guy can get to the quarterback, Julius Peppers seems to have no problem getting to the quarterback anymore. But that play, you just couldn't get your John Kuhn pick you off. Like, whatever. There's a lot going on in that play. Enough blame to go around.
Well, you mentioned, well, you think about momentum. Trestman, of course, the end of his coach. He had a lot of momentum. It was negative momentum. He had it built up, and he moved forward. As the playoffs move forward, and you brought up a little bit of the Packers, like, how do you see it as you're in kind of the NFL Network Command Center, and let the listeners know we're talking with Adam Rank from the NFL Network. How important is it, do you think, for a team like Green Bay that people thought they might not, would not make the playoffs? Lots of injuries, too, over there, but they've got a lot of momentum. They're really kind of firing on all cylinders now.
They got the momentum, that's for sure. They should be winning that division. They should be running away with it. I think anything less than a Super Bowl win for those guys should be considered a disappointment, and I don't want to pile on the pressure or anything like that. But when you've got discount double check back there, you guys should be expecting to win. I'll say this, in my lifetime, listen, we talk about Bears quarterbacks and how bad they've been and how, you know, where outside of Jim McMahon, I think the second best guy might be Eric Kramer in my lifetime. I don't know.
Yeah.
You look at it and you say, listen, you compare that to the Packers who've had Favre, who's obviously in the Hall of Fame, Rodgers, who's probably going to go to the Hall of Fame. You know what? You've had just one more Super Bowl than us in my lifetime. So, I don't know. Listen, I think it should be considered a little bit of a failure. And so, I think that with that momentum, right now they look like the team to be. I really think, you know, going into the playoffs, they look like the ones who are humming along in all cylinders. And the one thing that you have to note, though, is that Aaron Rodgers is magical in December. I think that he's lost one home game in December since 2008, which is pretty incredible. But when it gets to January, things get a little bit different. I think Eli Manning has as many January wins in Green Bay as Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
So I think they're playing the wrong team. Like, I think that's the wrong matchup for them. That if they were playing anybody else, and I think whoever wins that game's in a great spot to go down and upset the Cowboys the following week. But I think the Packers are like, oh, it's great that we made the playoffs, but it probably wasn't great that we have the Giants coming into town, especially with the Giants and their ability to win in Green Bay. I honestly believe they probably would have been better off having to go to Seattle with the revenge game and all that stuff, and as terribly as that offensive line has been playing in Seattle, I think that would have been a better spot for them. But you know what? We'll see what happens. This will be whoever wins that game, I think, is going to end up in the NFC Championship game, heading down to Atlanta in a couple of weeks.
So let's talk a little bit about, you've got Dallas, this resurgence. They're in a perfect position. It's happened, you know, a couple times before where they've been there, but they always end up disappointing. So what do you think? Do you think it's going to be a little bit different for Dallas this year? I mean, is this the year maybe that they kind of break their own curse?
Time, though.
Right.
Yeah.
Get the Tony Romo factor. He's not the starting quarterback right now.
Yeah, it always seems he finds ways to perhaps not make it happen. You know, and he's got his defenders, you know, who will point at the circumstances. But you know what? The facts are the facts. And I think it was his former coach, Bill Parcells, who said, your record is what it is, you know. And I think that the Cowboys have to wear the fact that they've had so many years of futility and opportunities, losing home games and things of that nature. So this is a big chance for them. And I think Dak brings a little something special. I think Ezekiel Elliott is really great. But ultimately, it's that offensive line that's been doing so well. And if they can get guys healthy, I know Smith went out with an injury a couple of weeks ago. Hopefully he can come back. And it's really going to come down to how well they play defensively, too, because the one thing – that kind of went a little underreported for the Cowboys towards the end of the season was how improved their pass rush was. And their ability to get to the quarterback was really a catalyst to jumpstart that defense. And they're not going to be dominant. They're not going to be, you know, the mid-80s Bears or anything like that. But they're good enough to allow that team to kind of stay in games. And I think the way that they play, where they kind of like to bleed their opponents, you know, they play the long drives and eating up a lot of clock, which gives them a great opportunity to win the playoffs. But I think, you know, the Giants have their – that's the one thing. The Giants are just that one team. I don't think anybody wants to see them in the playoffs because, right. like, the Giants have done well in Green Bay. The Giants have done well against the Cowboys, both in the regular season and the playoffs. And if you want to look all the way to the Super Bowl, well, you don't need to be reminded what the Giants have been able to do to the Patriots in the Super Bowl. So I think a lot of people are like, let's get the Giants out of it, right. and then it might make things a little bit more interesting.
Well, people are looking at, and I think Cowboys fans are hoping, and you've seen it a little bit during the season, where Dak is kind of just young enough and oblivious to all of that history and that pressure and that disappointment. I don't think it wears on him like it might a Tony Romo, so we'll see how it goes. You mentioned the Patriots, you know, with suspensions, injuries, just players rotating in and out and all that stuff. They just keep trucking along. I mean, What is it? Is it the system? Because we talked about it earlier in the week with some of our NFL experts, none as you know, expert as you, of course, from the, you know, from the mountaintop, from the Oracle. But they mentioned, you know, some of these players that leave the Patriots organization don't go off to be great players in other ways. It kind of lends itself to the system.
Yeah, what did Jamie Collins do? I mean, it seems like every season the Patriots trade somebody and everybody just kind of, you know, wrings their hands or gnashes their teeth, and they're like, how are they getting rid of this player? This obviously Jamie Collins, who I just mentioned a moment ago. I remember one time when it was Logan Mankins or whoever, Willie McGinnis, you know, one of my colleagues, you know, even a while ago, you know. And it just says a lot about what Bill Belichick has done with this team. And really, the most impressive thing about them this season is that offensively they've been able to continue to be very good, even though they've lost Rob Gronkowski. Because in the past couple of years, if they would have lost Gronkowski, that would have shut pretty much everything down. But they're still trucking along pretty well. I think LeGarrette Blount, along with James White, have been doing a great job. I mean, they haven't even had to use Deion Lewis at all. You know, and he could be, you know, a secret weapon out of the backfield as well. They brought in Michael Floyd, who had some problems in Arizona and never really been a consistent performer. And then you see the effort that he gave to get into the end zone against the Dolphins. You're like, wow, this guy really understands what it's like to be given a second chance that he might not, probably should not be having, but he's going to make the most of it. So he's playing well. But ultimately, the thing that has made the Patriots the most impressive this season is that defense, where you trade a big-name player. They traded Chandler Jones a couple of years ago, too. So they've got rid of some big-name guys, and yet they've still allowed just 15 points a game, or just a hair over 15 points a game this season. They're the top-scoring defense. And that's the one thing that stands out to me, which is why they're able to win a lot of these games. And I know a lot of people point to the schedule and, oh, they're not playing anybody. It's like, look, there isn't anybody to play. There's like three good teams in the NFL, and everybody else is just about the same. Except, you know, there's some lower level. I'm not making a Bears joke there. I think that we're right along there. We've had bad luck. Like, come on. We weren't the Browns or the 49ers. There was some bad luck involved.
Yes. Some understandable excuses out there. They shared them during the press conference. We hope to mend some of those fences and on to greatness for the next year. But in the meantime, as the playoffs go on, we don't know who's going to win, but that's why they play the games. And thanks so much, Adam, for all that you're doing. Before we let you go, let our listeners know how they can follow you on Twitter, social media, and keep up with all of your NFL adventures.
Oh, thank you so much. If you're a Twitter person, it's at Adam Rank. And if you're a Facebook person, it's, I'm going to keep it simple as well, at Adam Rank. And so you can keep up with me on that kind of stuff. I'm doing a little bit more fun stuff. I'm going to be doing a thing in a couple of days where I'm releasing my top five dynasties of all time. All four major U.S. sports. I really dove into it, and I've been working on it for a while. So check that out. And then otherwise, you know, the season will start soon enough. And I'll be sitting here talking about how the Bears are going to go 13-3 and win the division.
Positivity.
I think it's going to happen.
But it's the glass is always half full, of course, when it comes to the Bears. Adam, thanks. Love what you do. Thanks so much for being on the show tonight.
No, thank you so much for having me. It's always an honor to be on. I appreciate it. Always good to at least verbally be back in my hometown. So thank you guys so much.
I'll remind you, 5 degrees. All right, see you later. Thanks, Adam. All right, that is Adam Rank from the NFL Network. We are going to take a break now. When we come back, we'll send it to news. It's staying here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It is Daniel here in the Allstate Showcase studio in for Patty on Pretty Late Until 2 a.m. I do have a long time and often seated guest to my right, Dino Tiberi, and Tom Hush in the booth spinning the hits. He's the spin master at this point. It's the quiet storm, as he's known to listeners.
It's all good right now. The quiet storm working his magic back there.
You know, the storm of athletic competition. You know, I wish a John Facenda voice would come in. And
frozen tundra of Lambeau Field,
right? I guess they are going to be playing Lambeau Field and other places around. Of course, the Bears again, right? We just beat it up. Well, they won't be involved, but we could always watch the reruns. But Dino, so what do you think? Let's go through some of the games and give some thoughts. 312-981-7200. If any listeners have any kind of inside information that they want to share,
yeah. Saturday, the first game in the afternoon is Oakland at Houston. Now, Oakland. Derek Carr broke his leg in the last game, not this last one, but the one before that. And so now their Connor Cook, a rookie, is taking the reins at quarterback for Oakland. So it's going to be, I mean, they're good enough to win that game. Houston's had the quarterback problems of their own. They go back to Brock Osweiler because Tom Savage suffered a concussion last week. So you're going to have quarterback issues on either side of the ball. I think Oakland... Even on the road, I think Oakland will have enough to win in a close game there.
Do you think that this is kind of an example of today's players not being as tough as maybe the players in the NFL from yesteryear? Because I remember, if I'm recalling correctly, a Jack Youngblood broke his leg and just taped it up and had an aspirin, and he was right back in there.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit different these days. I don't want to go out and say that they're not as tough or not as physically strong, but... Yeah, Jack Youngblood, that's a throwback right there. I mean, he just said, tape it up, and I'm going back out there. And he ended up finishing the game with a broken bone in his leg.
If only Joe Theismann would have taken that same advice. Aspirin and tape.
Yeah, exactly. Boy, oh, boy. Oh, man. But our second game on Saturday's Detroit at Seattle. Detroit, you know, they've been around a little over 500. They've lost to the Packers in the last game of the season at home. Seattle's been, you know, kind of up and down a little bit themselves. But, you know, I think Seattle's the clear-cut favorite in that game to win at home against Detroit.
I feel as much as, you know, you feel kind of bad for you know, us as Bears fans, you know, what we're going with. You look at a team. Detroit has just been, I mean, it's been entire, like, multiple lifetimes and generations of just real disappointment, right? They've never even had it. They've had a team that was okay. They were trying to say, oh, this would have been the first kind of, you know, end of the season game or playoff game that they would host since 92.
Yeah, they played when Barry Sanders was still playing. They did make it. They won their first playoff game, and then they lost to the Redskins in 91, I believe. And that
was a long time ago.
Do the math. It's 26 years ago. It's pretty amazing.
Because you got Stafford in there, and you know, you kind of hit on it. They had little kind of moments of maybe they're going to start making a run or putting a run together, being good and kind of getting things done. You know, then they, you know, they lose Megatron and now I don't know if they'll ever get over the hump, you know, cause when they get to that point of critical mass where you've got some really good marquee players that can only keep them for a handful or a couple of years. Right. Then they're gone.
Right.
And they're left kind of trying to rebuild things. It's always kind of plugging little holes in the dike.
They just don't seem to be, you know, organization wise, you know, they've had a history of making bad decisions. You know, drafting wide receivers in several years in a row back when Matt Millen, that disaster that took place back, you know, in the last 10 years. And so it's been an uphill battle. Stafford, a lot of talent, but he has breakdowns. You know, he reminds me a little bit of Cutler, but he's, you know, more consistent than Cutler because, you know, he'll make a mistake, you know, and then he'll still be able to lead you down the field. Cutler, you don't know, you know, half the time you don't know what you're getting with that guy. So, but that's my own personal opinion. I'm not a Jay fan, as you probably have figured out at this point. But, you know, Stafford, he's going to have his troubles. I think Seattle's going to take that one.
Yeah,
I think so. Double digit win.
So what's our next games then?
Miami at Pittsburgh on Sunday, the early game. And Miami, another team. It's, you know, another quarterback issue. You've got, you know, Ryan Tannehill got knocked out. He's out probably for the rest of the season. They've got Matt Moore as a backup. Not the ideal situation going into Pittsburgh, you know, with their history in the playoffs. And
it's a tough place to play.
Yeah, it's a tough place to play. They rested Roethlisberger Antonio Brown and Bell last week, so I think they'll be hungry and ready to go, and they should take that game as well, probably 7 to 10 points in that one.
Okay.
Being at home, as you know, and then the last one, of course, the Giants at Green Bay on Sunday, 3:40 in the afternoon, so and up in the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field.
Oh, it thaws out for the Giants. You know, and that, they can have games where it's, I remember games where it was, you know, snowy or cold or bad weather, and it happens. But there is something about it. Adam Rank from NFL Network, who was just on with us, really kind of hit on it, is they've got the number of certain teams and have just played Eli Manning, whatever you say about him, as far as like where he fits into kind of the pantheon of quarterbacks, won a couple Super Bowls. But when it comes to playoff time and on the road in certain cities, you know, he's the guy you want.
Yeah, he's been, you know, pretty consistent over the years in the playoffs, and you know, he's got a couple big wins on the road, especially as you mentioned, and I think they're not going to be intimidated by going to Lambeau Field and playing. And the Packers are, you know, for all that Aaron Rodgers provides, they still have question marks on the other side of the ball as well. So
they almost have, and you feel it is the Packers, they almost have more pressure on them, even though you'd think, hey, you know, we're at home, we've got momentum, you know, but really, right, because it has a kind of a tendency of ending really badly when the Giants come in.
Yeah, it's just, you know, back to Brett Favre, you know, ended with that interception, you know, and to end the game.
That one interception?
The one of four, I believe, or however many he had in that game. But the biggest one was at the end when, you know, they turned the ball over and then the Giants won and went on to the Super Bowl. So it's, you know, I Giants have a good chance to get a win this weekend. I look at it being a close game. I don't think either team's going to run away with it. I think the weather conditions may, you know, be a factor if it's colder. But they both play in cold weather stadiums, so it won't be that much of a factor, really. I think the Giants can get them by a field goal and get an upset.
I think in an important game time situation, a team, if they can bring in an unexpected player from out of almost nowhere, I think you can increase your chances for success. We saw that with the Cubs bringing in Kyle Schwarber. We thought, you know, everybody thought that he was gone for the season. Boom, he's there. He's a designated hitter, contributing and helping lead the Cubs to victory in the World Series. And on the football side, if there's a couple, you know, kind of marquee players, some that were top draft picks, Heisman Trophy winners, you know, MVPs, Hall of Famers, if you could bring them in and have them contribute to your team, I think that maybe teams would do that. A couple players that come to mind but are unavailable because they're busy playing for the Celebrity Apprentice is Eric Dickerson and Ricky Williams. So there they are, you know, and if you remember,
they're a little older, but they could probably still be the best running back on the Packers right now, because who are they running out there?
Ty Montgomery,
a wide receiver.
These are valid points, and if you were the different kind of incarnations of that show, they will have athletes in there. They try to take a cross section, you know, you take some, you know, D-list actors that are out of work. You take some. Maybe some people from the business, or some people that are of note, you know, that may not be entertainers, quote unquote. And then you bring in some athletes as well. You throw them all in a big pot, and you just make them do embarrassing things, and then film them arguing, and then boom, you've got yourself a show.
The cherry on top is Arnold Schwarzenegger running the show as the point. As the man who sends them packing when they're not when the job's not getting done.
The punchlines for that were like, well, geez, this is interesting. How are they going to do it? When he fires, he's going to say, you're fired. Or is he going to say, you're terminated? And of course, he does that, but he builds on it and also says, hasta la vista.
Yeah, he changed it up. Every person that got let go was not let go with the same line.
And in the past, if you'll remember, they took that long and lonely elevator ride down to the limo that would take them, I guess, to the airport or wherever it is they were going. But now they run to the chopper.
Get to the chopper. Yeah, that's it. They get in the helicopter and they fly them right out of there. There's no delay. No long walk of shame. You walk up on the roof and then get out. That's it.
Dina, did you? This was the premiere episode of Celebrity Apprentice was recently. I watched it, and I think based on, you know, the political success of, you know, it's Donald Trump's show, you know, for whatever reason, I don't know if it had anything to do with that, but there was just more awareness of the program. Sometimes they'll go by with a couple seasons and I won't catch it.
Or...
Yeah. You know, if there's not an Illinois governor, what? You know, on trial, on, you know, participating in the show, or, you know, or Dennis Rodman isn't there,
sure,
or something. You won't necessarily watch it, but I got a chance to watch it, and it just reminded me, like, kind of what it's just like a silly show. I mean, it's popular, though.
It's not, you know, the blueprint hasn't changed. It's just the characters have changed. That's all. You know, don't have Donald Trump in there, obviously, and, you know, Arnold's the main guy, and who was with them? They had an actress was there. I'm trying to remember the names of the people. I just saw part of it. I didn't watch the whole thing. So.
Well, you brought in a Snooki. Snooki is there, yeah. You know, who was in the show. She was in the Jersey Shore show.
Sure, and I was thinking more along the lines of, like, who he had it brought in to, as his advisors or whatever.
Yes. Well, I think for this one it is, so you've got Arnold in the middle, and
right.
Then you've got Arnold's nephew to the right, who's like Brad Schwarzenegger, but he has an Austrian accent too, so he's, you know,
all
like, right. I think this is very good, you know, right? And then you've got, I don't know if that's a bad accent. So then the other person to the right, I can't remember, but
it's the one who's America's Top Model.
Tyra Banks.
Tyra Banks is in there, and then the other one was, what the heck? She's been in a bunch of movies, and I can't think of her name off the top of my head. But yeah, I think she's the other one, and then the cast of characters they have there, Boy George, John Lovitz.
John Lovitz. Wasn't he already in it a few times?
Probably. I mean, he could have been in several seasons I never watched.
And yeah, and then you've got, there's Elisa Leslie in there. You've got Vince Neil from Motley Crue and Boy George. And you've got, you know, just kind of all the crazy hijinks. And so they have them have tasks. They build in, because it's all marketing. And he's built in, you know, it's kind of an advertising thing. So you've got, you know, the folks over at Omaha Steaks or whatever. And then they've got to get in there and put a promotional video together. It's got to be just so embarrassing. I don't know.
It was boys against girls, too, this time. I think that's how they split it up. Usually, sometimes they'll mix the teams up, but... For whatever reason, they decided they were going to go boys against girls, and let's see what comes out of all that. But week one in the books.
Yep.
There'll be more to come for that. We'll find out how many people Arnold can eliminate in the next couple of weeks as we go along here.
They've tried to say that maybe Donald Trump, based on he should separate his activities as the president and then also participating in the program, kind of separate those situations. But how long do you think it will be? Because, you know, Donald Trump would love, you know, he's going to be on television a lot, you know, breaking news from the, you know, he's going to come in and he doesn't have to tweet anymore when he can just command the airwaves.
Well, exactly.
Right? How long do you think it'll be before he comes in to break ties or something? this he's like, and they'll have like a, you know, Arnold will be like, geez, no one knows what's going to happen. They'll be like, it's time for a presidential tiebreaker, you know, and then he pops up on a screen somewhere. What do you think?
Yeah, they're going to have to do something because, according to what I saw, it looks like the ratings were down about 35% from the opening episode of the last show. So,
well, then Mr. Trump will have to get involved.
He's going to have to get involved to boost those ratings.
I think what he's going to do is, instead of like a redemption round, he's going to pardon people for the show and bring them back if they've been kicked off. I'm going to pardon you.
Come on.
I'm just saying, they're going to figure out ways to capitalize so he can participate in the program, but in a presidential way. It's going to happen.
If anybody can make that happen, it would be Donald Trump, that's for sure.
Yep, he's going to do it. So many things in the news. I know that Tom has pulled some of the stories, the headlines, from the wacky and weird world of reality, right? And so we're going to hit some of those when we come back. We'll take a break right now. It's Dane here on 720 WGN.
My most profitable locker would probably be the Frank Gutierrez art locker that I just recently got. It was appraised for over $300,000.
Well, I think, you know, anytime you put up 525 yards, I mean, there's some good things. You know, I think our demise a bit has been, you know, the collection of points. I think, you know, we make two drives down there early in the game and, you know, come away with 6 points instead of 14. And those are big swings, especially you know, on the road against an explosive team, you know, like an Andrew Luck-led Indianapolis Colts team. So,
see, just a little context for the listeners, because they weren't in on some of the planning sessions. So John Fox has a very unique voice, and just as he collects points, he mentioned it right. Daryl from the show Storage Wars, which is a little more obscure,
junk.
He collects you know,
whatever he can get.
Hopefully valuable resale items,
right?
From storage lockers. but the voices
it's amazing how uncanny they sound, just like each other.
That's pretty good too. That is pretty good too. So you've watched that show on the obscure show level. The story.
Yeah, I like that show.
They've made celebrities out of these Storage War characters.
Of course.
So they're in there. So you've got Barry, right?
Right. He's the Joe Madden, like the oddball. Yes, he's very kind of reminds me of Joe a little bit, the way he looks. But then the Daryl and his son. Of course, Dave, the one that, you know, the obnoxious, most obnoxious one of all.
Right. He's kind of your villain. Because his success, he's the Floyd Mayweather of Storage Wars. Okay. So I'm sure a lot of people aren't aware of some of these programs, but we talk about, you know, the Celebrity Apprentice. Everyone's aware of it, but it's kind of obscure as far as the, you know, it isn't necessarily everybody's favorite program.
No. Well, as the ratings told, they're down, and not a lot of people were watching that first episode, so.
A little bit earlier in the week, another show that I happened. This is the wonderful thing about cable. And these days, you wonder what shows don't get made because there are shows that are. Have you ever seen the Naked and Afraid show? Where they just
heard about it, never watched it.
I think they're
just put a guy out in the middle of nowhere naked. Is that how it works?
I think it's a couple people at a time. Oh, I think they're respectfully blurred out in certain areas, and they just throw them out in the woods and then just film them being uncomfortable. I think that's basically the show. But you wonder how the pitching went for that show. Here's, I got an idea.
He's going to put a naked guy out in the middle of nowhere and see if he can fend for himself to get back to civilization.
People love naked people. So you have that show. I saw a show that it's a shocking show. It's called My Strange Addiction, I think it is. My Strange Obsession, My Strange Addiction.
It could be, yeah.
And what it does is it shows, you know, people, like real people. It's a documentary type show, so it isn't, you know, actors or actors. There's no dramatizations that I'm aware of. And they show them, they've got strange things that they either like or are addicted to or have to do, or compulsions and things like that. Well, here's a couple examples.
Yeah, go ahead.
So one example was in a recent episode, this lady that would not, we've heard of this kind of thing, but she won't clip her toenails or her fingernails. And so her toenails and fingernails are incredible.
8 feet long?
Well, they're not 8 feet. It's not Crystal Gale of fingernails. But
don't make my brown eyes blue, Dane. That's it.
These are non-functional hands anymore. You know, they're at least a foot and a half long on the nails. She could never. So she goes bowling, which I get it.
Oh, that's got to be a good time.
Well, I think she just like grabbed the ball and then tossed it. She could not wear the bowling shoes because there is specific footwear for the activity, right? So they had to
be something with an open toe.
They tried putting just a giant clown size.
Oh, come
to
on.
Accommodate these toenails,
really?
Which were the toenail, the big toenail, had to be a good 8 inches in length. So even if you've got the smallest foot.
And her reasoning behind this is just because she wanted to keep them growing.
Well, you like to bowl. You're on a league, they're counting on you, whatever. So here's what they ended up doing is they ended up using laces to tie the bowling shoes to the bottom of her feet, and needless to say, she wasn't very effective.
How long did this go on? Did they show her like bowling two frames?
Well, they showed her trying to do activities.
How did that work out for her? She probably not very well.
Gutter ball. It was terrible. She was awful. Yeah, she was terrible.
There was a shock.
But she had an excuse built in because she could blame her nails. But she was attached to them, so they went to a doctor because the family is concerned that her nails are too long, I guess. And the doctor recommends, guess what, Dino? Trimming the nails.
Yeah. Well, here's my recommendation. Well, maybe you want to cut back a little bit on those nails.
The nails.
Then you'll be able to function much better in society if they're not a foot long.
Yeah, she's horrified. So she was just, I can't do that. And the other show from that episode is, this lady was obsessed with eating dirt. So she ate at least 2 pounds of dirt a day.
2 pounds of dirt?
13 pounds of dirt a week.
Does she have some condiments or something on the side with
the
dirt?
Nope,
just dirt sandwich?
They showed her, you know, watching television and enjoying
dirt.
Like a popcorn bowl of dirt. And there's other ones that are a little bit weird, too.
How in the world is that good for you? That can't be.
It can't. And so, again,
the doctor, you better stop eating dirt or you're just going to blow up.
So the family tries to do an intervention and take her to the doctor, and the doctor explains that eating dirt is, and then dryer sheets. One of the ladies was eating dryer sheets. Yep, a whole box a day. Yeah. So these people are.
Oh, it sounds like a good time. I can't wait to check that out.
There's a show for you. But they all had their clothes on and they weren't respectively blurred. So it was great. We're going to take a break right now, and then when we come back, we'll send it to news. It's Dane here on 720 WGN. Oh, that's right. We combined the breaks. So we've got that. So when we come back, we are going to kind of take a look back at some of the interviews that we kind of enjoyed throughout the course of the year. Dino, I remember, I think you tasted them, the Dane Tonomo.
The German chocolate donut.
Yep.
Oh, man, that was fantastic.
So here in Chicago, it's a great sports town, unless you're thinking about football and the sports that aren't happening when it comes to playoffs and the Bears. But we have got, you know, great sports, great architecture, great people, great food, right? And yep. great donuts, you know, and the donut craze is something that happened. I don't know how long has it been, Dino, when the donuts went from Dunkin' Donuts, just kind of a thing that you'd have with your coffee, to
exploding, where there's all kinds of different donut stores and donut companies that, you know, Krispy Kreme making a comeback apparently in the Chicago area too. So that's, you know, they, donuts.
They kind of missed the train on that.
Yeah, they got in on the, well, they were in the front end, then they got kicked, then they left, and then decided to come back in. So
you got glazed and infused, you got Stan's Donuts, you got Beaver's Donuts, and you got Do-Right Donuts. So when we come back, we'll probably hear a little bit
donut places
from Jeff Mahan, the executive chef over there at Do-Right. Right now, it is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. It is 1 o'clock and news time. Here's Rob Martier. WGN, Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio in for Patty on Pretty Late. And before we went to the break and to the news, we talked about Chicago being a great, you know, town for a bunch of different things, certainly food as well. And you think of the food that we have here, so much of the food that makes its way all around the country, whether it's our produce or pork or cattle or all, you know, the corn and all the kind of things. Iowa is definitely one of those bread baskets for it. On the line with us now to kind of give us some insight into ways that that our farmers, if you're a farmer, you can farm almost anything. You adjust maybe if one crop is necessary over another, or one kind of livestock. And they are just thinking outside the box here. Iowa's fish farmers. It's Maddie Oatman. She's a writer for Mother Jones. Maddie, welcome to WGN.
Thanks for having me. So how are you guys tonight?
We're good. How are you? What's the temperature wherever it is that you are?
So I'm in San Francisco. It's kind of chilly. It's like mid-40s here.
Oh.
How about Chicago?
Why don't you take a guess? Oh, yeah. You can either go regular temperature or you can go wind chill.
Oh.
Take your pick.
I don't envy that, I have to say.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Here's the thing. In the summertime, though, in Chicago, it's very nice. We will rarely have some of the chilly times that you guys have in San Francisco in the summertime. So we've got that going for us.
Yeah, the 3 months out of the year that we get that.
Yeah. I mean, it's
no, it's so true.
You gotta,
I mean, I always miss the warm evenings. We don't get those here, even in the summer. It's always chilly. So.
Well, we love the article that you wrote, and so let's talk a little bit about it, because, you know, one of the many, we're inundated with gloom and doom when it comes to our news stories, whether it's, you know, challenges and crises and turmoil and conflict all around the world, or some of those environmental things, whether it's, you know, global warming or just there's not going to be enough food to feed everyone. And, you know, when it comes to America, you know, Iowa is one of those places that is part of the solution and not the problem, growing food. And now bringing in the fish side of things, like talk a little bit about what you discovered out there in Iowa.
Sure. So we are being asked to double our seafood consumption. Fish is, you know, a pretty healthy food. And so now the USDA and the dietary guidelines recommends that people eat 2 servings of fish a week. However, the oceans are becoming less and less a good source for that fish because of a lot of different factors. And so these farmers in Iowa who are hog farmers, third-generation hog farmers, they took a look at an old hog barn they had and realized they could use it to raise fish instead. And their operation was really successful at a smaller scale. They were able to raise barramundi, which is an Australian saltwater fish. And, they started selling it to restaurants and grocery stores around the region. And so now they're trying to scale up. And that could mean that they could be selling up to 10 million pounds of seafood a year in the Midwest.
Wow. You always have those transportation issues. And I know with their situation, they're having the fish you know, when they're small, kind of come in from Australia, and they're actually growing them on the farm. But to not have to deal with, you know, seafood being flown in, to have kind of a central location as far as supply going in the Midwest, is, I think it's going to be exciting. How do you see that happening? Of course, it's going to be more fish for more people. You mentioned the health aspects. It's something that we should incorporate more of in our diet. Do you think that it's going to change eating habits? Is it going to change the prices of fish if there's more of them?
That's a good question. Well, so actually a couple of people, you know, have reached out to me after reading this article and said, you know, my Blue Apron now includes, you know, my Blue Apron membership now includes barramundi sometimes on the menu. So it seems like people are kind of shifting to possibly eating more seafood and even eating more barramundi now. I think in terms of cost, it's actually, you know, seafood, we import 90% of our seafood, and a lot of that is really cheap fish coming from Asia, China and Malaysia. And it's definitely, you know, I don't know that the cost is necessarily going to drop just because we raise it locally in the U.S. But I think there are a lot of reasons that we maybe want to do that. Because so much of that imported seafood is coming with all sorts of things that we don't really know what they are, like antibiotic-resistant bacteria being some of those things.
Right. You can control the environment. You don't have to worry about mercury and some of the things that you would out in the wild. And when it comes to the barramundi, is it a popular, and to let the listeners know that may not be completely familiar, I think that you've got a good candidate here because it's the size of a coho salmon. That's pretty big. And then the flavor of a red snapper, which is a really popular fish. Is this a really popular fish in Australia? And then, or is this kind of, I don't want to say a lab created situation, or did they try to find, hey, this fish can kind of hold up to all of those things, whether it's the travel or the environmental changes or just living in Iowa, and it's a good candidate to be able to survive and make it to market?
Yeah. That's what's kind of fascinating about the barramundi to me. It's thought to be a very robust, hardy species. And because it actually travels in the wild from ocean up rivers, it gets trapped in the billabongs in Australia. And so it's used to surviving in these low oxygen environments. So it's almost as if it's more likely to do well in a farmed environment because it has evolved to do well with less oxygen. So that to me was kind of a fascinating scientific element of this story.
Well, the family that you featured, the Nelsons, it's a third generation Iowa farming family. And what was the thought process and the reason for it in that part of the country and in that farming area? Things are, and decisions like that are made more based on practicality than, you know, kind of concern for the environment or trying to help people's health or things like that. This just seemed probably like a right business decision for the family and for the farm. But you were, you know, you got a chance to talk with them and learn about it. Why did they do it? Did they think, hey, this would be a good choice dollar wise? And what made them? This is a big undertaking.
Yeah, really good point. So I think that the hog market really has ups and downs. And around 2008, 2009, when the Nelsons, that's the family I talked to, when they switched away from as much hog farming, the market had really soured. And so they were looking for other opportunities. So it was two cousins, Mark and Jeff Nelson, and they were at kind of a hog convention, and they saw a diagram of these feed dispensers that they were used to seeing, but they were actually hung over a pool of tilapia as opposed to, you know, a hog barn. And it kind of just, you know, the light bulb went off in Mark's eye, and he thought, well, we have this empty hog barn now. What if we tried fish instead? The cool thing is, the fish farming seems to be what is keeping their kids and their nieces and nephews in farming now, which I thought, you know, was also an exciting part of the story. It's not just about the fish. It's what this project is doing in keeping younger people excited about it. So I think from a practical standpoint, you know, it has novelty and it has, you know, momentum behind it right now. And it has investors and interest, obviously. They kind of attracted attention from this company VeraBlue that came in and is now helping them scale up the project. So
it's, I mean, it is really interesting. It's really cool the way that you kind of share that moment, that light bulb moment of inspiration, because it's the kind of thing that I could see happening either here in the city or closer, or maybe on a smaller scale with specialty fish that are hard to get, where you can go ahead and just kind of grow your own, because yeah, fish is very popular. And I think if there's more of it, and you mentioned the health properties and all those kind of things, but I was wondering, you know, what was it where they said, well, let's do this. It still sounds terrifying that they just saw this and said, like, we've got an empty barn. Let's fill it with fish from Australia. I was thinking that you may have said, you know, you remember that infomercial about the alpacas? Like, hey, would you like your own business? Alpacas have sensitive eyes. Right. And so then you have these things there. So I didn't know if there was a, you know, an Australian infomercial saying, like, grow your own barramundis.
Right. Well, you know, they actually started with a striped sea bass. So they didn't jump right into the barramundi right away. And, you know, fish farming has been going on around the world and around the U.S. for a long time, usually at a much smaller scale. I think the largest fish farm is called Blue Ridge Aquaculture in Virginia, and they farm tilapia. But other than that, you know, you have a lot of kind of smaller mom-and-pop operations and a lot of tilapia, which, you know, I think it does sort of well for people, but, you know, a lot of people aren't that excited about tilapia, it seems like. So I think part of the Nelson's idea is also to bring in a species of fish that really tastes good. And I, you know, barramundi gets really good feedback. I think it's buttery. It just has a little bit more going on.
I have to admit, that's first. I have never heard of the barramundi fish before now. But I know tilapia is, you know, different schools of thought on that. Some people think
schools. It's a nice fish pun.
Unintentional, of course. But tilapia, it's panned by some people. Some people like it. Do you feel like this, this type of fish will really be something that spreads out throughout the U.S. and catches on, and people will be looking at that maybe more so than the tilapia?
It's possible. I mean, tilapia is really easy to raise, so I think the jury's out about how well barramundi operations can do when they get big. But one thing to note is that the Nelson's actually, well, this company, VeraBlue, that is now sort of operating the Nelson's farm, they plan to actually have their own hatchery, so they will no longer be importing fish, you know, when they're 17 days old, from Australia all the way across the world to the U.S. So they're kind of trying, they're going to try to actually hatch the fish here. And I think, you know, time will tell whether they can pull that off. But I think it'll be an important, you know, indicator of whether barramundi can survive in the landlocked American states.
It's neat to see. You know, it is neat to see. It is one of those inspirational stories. And, of course, you know, America has this big, a love affair with the farmer. And, you know, you want to find as many ways to keep them involved, relevant, supported, and supportive as we can. It's an exciting thing. I know that what they're doing and your story is going to be an inspiration to other farmers out there that may want to, you know, do that whole kind of, you know, 180 switch from what it is that they were doing, or maybe just incorporate some of this into what it is that they do, because, you know, we all have to kind of look at different options on the food side. I think the world as a whole has to look at some of that, ways to kind of improve what it is that we're doing and do more of it, especially when it comes to things like fish. So Maddie, I want to thank you for being a part of the program. For those listeners that want to keep up with you and all your other stories, what other kind of things do you usually write on, and then where can they find you?
I write on, you know, food issues, also environmental issues and culture. So I try to find good news stories every so often, which can be tough. But basically you can go to motherjones.com. And the other thing I'm working on is a food podcast called Bite, and that's through Mother Jones. But if you just look up Bite on iTunes or Stitcher, you can hear our bi-monthly food podcast every other week, whatever that is.
So Maddie Oatman over there at MotherJones.com and her podcast, Bite. Get out there and enjoy what it is that she's doing as she has her hand on the pulse of the Barramundi scene, for sure.
Absolutely.
And a lot of the food issues going on in America. Maddie, thanks so much for, well, enjoy your warmer weather than what we have. And thanks thanks for being on the program tonight.
Yeah, thanks for your interest. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks.
Have a good night. Good night.
Yeah, I just want to remind, I'm sure Maddie knows this, that the Cubs beat the San Francisco Giants in the playoffs, and those were exciting times, right?
Right, absolutely.
They can have their weather. We've got a trophy, well, listen, shiny trophy. Got,
right, and hopefully I'm going to be able to see it sometime this weekend as well.
At the Cubs convention, we're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. We're going to take a break right now, and when we come back, there'll be a little bit more of that on 720 WGN. Cool classic rock tunes.
Boston.
Courtesy of the Quiet Storm. Tom Hush in the booth. Dane Neal here, 720 WGN, in for Patty on Pretty Late. I do have Dino Tiberi to my right. And exciting times. We talk with Teddy Greenstein about more reasons and opportunities for people to get out there and enjoy Wrigley Field, whether it's the concerts or whether it's these upcoming bowl games that they're going to have for us. And of course they're preparing the area with hotels so that you don't ever have to go home. You could just just be like Howard Hughes, rent out the penthouse,
spend the night.
Yes, spend the weekend, spend the day. I'm not going home, Mom. You're just going to stay there and enjoy Wrigley Field and all that it has to offer. Well, I think since the season ended, people have been looking forward to, fans have been looking forward to the Cubs convention, because you're going to get to not only, you know, enjoy, commiserate, rub elbows with other fans of the mighty Cub, but also, and Dino, you talk about, you get a chance to see the trophy in action.
Yeah,
whatever it does. It doesn't do anything,
no,
but
it
does
just sits there. But you get opportunity to have your picture taken with it, and you know, they're going to have it at the Cub convention. They're also going to have it in a couple different spots around the city and the suburbs. It's been on a little mini tour already in different places. I think it's going to be, I want to say it's going to be in Rockford on Sunday at the Ice Hogs Chicago Wolves game. So those of people out in the Rockford area have an opportunity to see the World Series championship trophy on Sunday, I believe.
How do they choose, how do they determine where the trophy goes? Is it the kind of thing where you can go online and say, like, we'd like it to come to our grade school, you know, and well, then maybe you get pulled out of the hat. Because how does it end up at Ice Hogs? No offense to the Ice Hogs, but there's not.
I just think they probably put it at a place where, you know, a lot of people can see it. I know with the Stanley Cup, I went to Wilmington, southwest suburb, far southwest, actually, and we went to the high school there and actually got a picture taken with the Stanley Cup in 2015, so. And, you know, that bounced around. But this is a new concept. I don't think a lot of teams have taken the championship trophy and brought it around. So it's going to be something Chicago is trying, because they know how the people flock to see the Stanley Cup. And since you only win once in 108 years, you got to, you know, maximize your time with the, you know, the trophy and get it out there so that people can see it.
Well, good thing about this, as opposed to the Stanley Cup, and we've had kind of a luxury of having it around quite a bit over the last X amount of years, 3 Stanley Cup championships by the mighty Blackhawks. So you get it there, but it's a trophy that travels, and it's here when you're the champion and it's gone when you're not,
right,
as opposed to, you know, the commissioner's trophy for Major League Baseball. Like that, you get your own dedicated trophy, right? So
yep,
you can just hang out wherever you are.
Yeah, the White Sox went through it in 2005. Now the Cubs get their shot, 11 years later to get it done. So it was great. And, of course, with the Cub convention, they'll have that on display, so people will be able to see that. And that's already sold out. All the hotel rooms are sold out. All the tickets are sold out. Probably going to be a jam-packed event, as it always is, but with a different buzz this year coming off of.
What do you think is going to be a little different? Because oftentimes the Cubs convention was just, you know, kind of people jaded and cynical. You know, they're kind of jeering at the management, or whether it was the Tribune or the Ricketts family.
Grant just Kenny.
Just doubting that anything could work out properly. And people come in, well, you shouldn't have done this, you shouldn't have done that. Now, I think there's nobody can complain about too much. I mean, the best case scenario is the one that took place. I think you'll see a lot of fans that either know each other or know of each other that are just excited to share the excitement. You'll probably see some high fives, maybe some hugs, maybe some tears.
Oh, it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of emotion, you know, that first night when they bring all the players and the past and present out. And, you know, you know, there's going to be a lot of people with some, you know, I mean, they already had emotionally. I mean, I'm watching. I'm still getting emotional at the end of the fact that, you know, they won the title and, you know, but to have that all go on and to get to see your guys in the middle of winter when there's still, you know, some time before spring training starts, that, you know, that's what makes this event so great. And, you know, John McDonough started it, you know, many, many years ago, and now he's replicated it with the Blackhawks.
And that's I just did like a barbecue. Oh, there it is. That shows that you really like it. So, and John McDonough, kudos to him for all the things that he has done, because one of the smart things, one of the many, many, many smart things that he has done or put together is really kind of embracing and incorporating the players, like either legendary players or just players of the past, and kind of bringing them into the fold so that people can get in there and you can enjoy a Bobby Dernier, right? You can get a chance to see some of these other, a Steve Trout.
Well, you're going to be able to see a lot of old Cub players that past and present that, you know, it's a good opportunity to get autographs, pictures. I mean, we used to go, the players that had, you know, one of the floors dedicated to them, the players in the hotel, and, you know, we'd go up there and get autographs from them. And I think people caught on to that. That was early on in the process with the Cub convention.
You'd be tugging on the shirt of a Rick Rushel.
Yeah, my buddy Jeff Brown and I and his son Richard, we'd go up there and we'd get, you know, we'd wait out, hang out in the lobby of the, because they all had to go to the elevator at some point, so you'd get them coming in and coming out. And You know, early on, that's how it worked out. But, you know, now it's, they've got security everywhere. They don't just let you go where you want to go. So, you know, they had rooms in the hotel, so they had, you know, access to get there, too. So it worked out great.
You bring up security. It's going to be
a lot of it.
It's going to be absolutely nuts, because I think that just the demand for access to the players and the situation is going to be unprecedented. In a lot of different ways. And so it's going to be, I just can't even imagine. I can't even imagine what it's going to be like. But what are some of the events? I know you had a list, kind of a rundown of some of the things that are going to go on at the Cubs convention, because it's at least 2 days, right? Is it 2 days or 3 days?
Yeah, it's 3 days. They kick off the first night. They just introduce the players, you know, past and present. They come out. Last year they had them walking out on a runway type situation. I know in the past, you know, before they moved over to Sheridan, they had them on a balcony where they came out and walked around and they were up above everybody. But now,
this time they'll probably rappel down.
Yeah, who knows? But they'll walk through and then they'll high five the fans as they walk up, you know, from one end to the other. And then the next day they'll have a lot of different meetings where, like, you know, where you can go and sit and find out about how the plans for the stadium and the surrounding areas are going. You know, as we saw last year where Crane Kenny was up there talking about the different developments in the area. You know, they have Cubs bingo. They have, like, you know, older, you know, the Cubs reminiscing about their time. You know, it's a lot of different events in a lot of different rooms, and there's going to be a lot of people. It's just going to be a jam-packed event for a couple of days there in the dead of winter, and it's going to be a good time.
On the souvenir side, you always have those collectors that, you know, have a lot of different things throughout the eras. From the team, and they'll bring their entire booth,
try to get,
you know, their flea
signed
market style booth, and you can get a bunch of stuff there where you can go ahead and kind of shop for things and check it out.
Big room downstairs. And 1 year I bought a plaque that said Richard Dent, the refrigerator, on it. So that was interesting. That's one of my collectibles at home. I actually had Richard Dent sign it for me. They had Bears stuff. They had all kinds of different stuff. So I found a plaque that said Richard Dent, and below it, the refrigerator.
Very nice. Yeah. Before we go to news, one last thing is, what is the historical precedence of players that were part of an important team and would want to, I guess, generally participate in the Cubs convention, but then they're off on other teams? Are we going to see a Dexter Fowler there? Aroldis Chapman, is he going to make a trip back for this? I mean, are they obligated to do that?
You won't see that from the players that are currently playing. Eventually, they'll come back after they, you know, their careers end, and, you know, if the Cubs want them to come back, they'll ask them to come back, and but current players, you won't see him. You won't see a Dexter Fowler coming back for the Cub convention.
Well,
seeing that he's a Cardinal now, you know, it's a little bit different situation there.
Yep, we heard a little bit before, I don't know, in the last segment about fish farming in Iowa. We've been doing some donut farming here in the Chicagoland area with Do Right. Before the end of the program, we'll talk with Chef Jeff Mahan about Do Right Donuts and the things that they're doing there. But right now it is 1:30 and news time. Here's Rob Martier. Love it. More cowbell. This is exactly at 7:20. WGN, Dave Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio in for Patty on Pretty Late until 2 a.m. I do have Dino Tiberi to my right. We were talking Cubs convention, all the excitement that's going on related to that. And Tom Hush, the quiet storm in the booth, giving us what we need, right? The prescription is for more cowbell.
That's right. You got to bring that out when you get the opportunity, as we found out in the Saturday Night Live skit with Christopher Walken many years ago.
And we talked about it, Dino, and I know I've talked about it on a number of different programs here on the station, is that when you have something as big and as legendary as what happened with the Mighty Cub, you know, you're going to probably at future Cub convention have a screening of the movie. I know that the Dances with Wolves director Kevin Costner, who's been in a lot of baseball movies, he's going to be a part of, or he wants to create a Cubs movie.
They all want to get in on it now.
When he does that, Hollywood blockbuster Blake Stubbs will be calling us from California,
of course,
to go over, you know, his critique of the movies, if they're really doing it, if they're not, if they've really captured the essence of the Cubs. Or maybe I think Zac Efron is a great Chris Bryant, so we got one thing cast right now. But when they make that movie, they haven't done it yet, but with movies that are out there now, we've got a movie moment. We've got Blake Stubbs on the line. Blake, welcome to WGN.
Hey, guys, how are you? Good evening.
How you doing?
Or good morning, I guess, depending on where you are right
now. Absolutely.
As listeners of the program will remember, oftentimes we'll have extended visits with you where we break down special effects or talk about entire movie franchises and all that. This is one of those times where kind of a quick hit, you know, you get out there, you see a movie, you're inspired, you want to let the listeners know. And so we're going to have a movie moment with Blake. And so you saw the movie Hidden Figures, and it, well, you laughed, you cried, and it became a part of you.
I did. And you know what? This is one of those movies where I was really psyched to see it. I loved the first trailer that I saw, and I was reading a whole bunch of buzz. And, you know, it was a lot of my friends, you know, even people who aren't like avid moviegoers, saw a trailer for this movie and wanted to go see it. Critically, it is one of the talks of every town right now. I think it's sitting at about 92% on Rotten Tomatoes. And if you want to add my review to it, I would like to give a very fresh review push toward it as well. Mainly, you know, this movie covers, if you're not familiar, this movie covers the stories of three women who are all three friends, and they're African-American women working for NASA in the early days of the Mercury 7 program, when they're trying to get Americans into space to beat the Russians. Well, the Russians beat us, and these women all have integral parts to play due to their exceptional talents with mathematics and calculation and engineering. And it's a captivating story that I'm really sad we've had to wait until now to get it out into the mainstream, but it's not a movie to miss. It's such an intriguing story that's acted so well. Your three major actresses in this are Taraji P. Henson, Octavia Spencer, who is an Oscar winner, and the singer Janelle Monáe. You know, many people only know her as a singer, but man, does she have some chops. I just came out of this movie incensed. I loved every bit of it, and I felt like it was one of those. I reached out right to you, Dan, and I said, you've got to go see this movie. It's so good.
Well,
put that one on your list.
It's high praise, and it sounds like high praise, and it's kind of cool when they do the movies where it's set in a scenario, situation, a place in time that everyone is familiar with as far as the context, but they tell a little bit of a different backstory or something that you weren't necessarily aware of. And for sometimes these scripts, you know, float around Hollywood for years at a time while they're waiting for the right people to make it or the right, you know, I guess, climate or moment in time for it to become relevant for people to do it on the studio side. So what was it with this one? Like, how long was this going to be made? How did the whole process happen?
It's my understanding that Margot Lee Shetterly's novel of the same title got a lot of buzz, got a lot of attention, and Theodore Melfi's direction, you know, teamed with the screenplay that they adapted from the novel, kind of expedited the process of getting this movie made. And with these three actresses, I think, brought in, and you mentioned Kevin Costner right before I joined, he's also in this film. He plays the head in charge of making sure that these rockets launch appropriately. And so, you know, I mean, a lot of people wanted to be involved in this production, and I've spent most of my evening watching clips of Taraji P. Henson talk about how she got involved in this project, you know, how you know, it was just so important for her to be a part of it. And it's just one of those movies where when you walk out, you feel inspired in some way. You acknowledge struggle because these were African-American women working when segregation was still a thing in Virginia, and they were working, you know, at Langley. And so they were having to battle things on a daily basis just to try to get to do their job effectively, but also make a difference. And so every one of them, you know, of the three main characters, each has their own struggle or drive or passion and objective that they want to, you know, complete and on their own terms. And that's very important as you watch this film to see their stories unfold and really just kind of become as invested in their story as the people around them are. But it's kind of hard to watch at times too, because the struggle, the way they depict it, is very, it feels very real. It feels, if you've never seen this type of approach to, you know, issues with racism, the Jim Crow laws, segregation, this has got a bit of a different take, because it focuses a lot more on how a lot of blind eyes were turned to how people were treated during that era. People of color, specifically.
Exciting times, you know, for the country, you know, the space race and all of that, where kind of the world's attention was focused on what was going on at NASA and all those things around it. But it wasn't, you know, this is an ancient times. So are the people that were, you know, the real life figures that are portrayed in the movie, do they still exist, or their family members, are they still alive? Has there been any kind of feedback from them? Because, you know, although, you know, just because of the way things were going on back in the day, now is an opportunity for them to get some of that credit and some of that limelight.
Well, as you can tell based on my energy and talking about the film, it has just endings for each of the three main characters. And the film tries to outline for you what sort of transpired following, you know, the time frame that the film covers. And each one of them ended up having very important careers with NASA, and it you know, continued on after this era, when at the time there was a lot of worry that once these rockets went up and once John Glenn orbited the, you know, the Earth, all their jobs were going to be lost. And so they all, you know, all of the women, not just the three main characters, but all of the women that worked there, who were African-American women who, you know, worked in their own separate building, had their own separate bathroom and all these other things. The integration of them into the overall picture of NASA and the space program during the height of the space race, and how they were sort of integrated into the fabric of what became the space program following John Glenn's orbit. It is addressed in the film. And I think without spoiling too many things, and I don't want to say all the characters' names because everybody will just look it up on Wikipedia and then not really enjoy the film. I think you should go watch the film and then do a lot of research after, because I think you're just going to be, you know, your eyes are going to be completely opened as to how important they were, their contribution, what they were doing that no one else was able to do. And it's nice in a way. I'm sad that we're getting this story now, but in a way it's great because we are getting this story. We're finally getting it.
Yeah.
And I think there's an entire generation of young women out there who are going to watch this and fall in love with, you know, math and science, which up until a certain point, you know, there was a very long period of time, including Taraji P. Henson was quoted. I believe she was on The View, and she talked about how, like, growing up, she was never told math and science was important for her. When she read this script, like, she was so hurt that she had been kind of cheated out of this potential passion. And so she was thrown into wanting to be a big part of this film due to that, so she can inspire other young women. And I think that's important. I think those are the types of films people need to go see.
A couple of nominations on the film already, a couple of Golden Globe Awards, Octavia Spencer for the Best Supporting Actress in a Motion Picture, and the score got the original score with Pharrell Williams, who, you know, he's...
Pharrell, yes. Yeah,
he's tremendous. He's a great talent.
There's some excellent music, you know, that's from the period that is accurate. That's more the incidental music within scenes. But all of Pharrell's contributions are quite excellent, I think, for this film. It really feels authentic. It has a nice sound to it. And it complements all the work by, you know, these three actresses who truly do carry the film. I mean, even with the likes of Kevin Costner, Jim Parsons from Big Bang Theory is in this. And Kirsten Dunst. You know, these are some other names. These are more maybe, I don't want to say household names, but in a way household names. And yet, you know, Janelle Monáe is sort of a shining star in this film for me. I mean, Taraji P. Henson is phenomenal, but I was really impressed with how Janelle Monáe, you know, who I know is a singer, just stepped right onto the screen, and it was like old hat for her. Well, and Octavia Spencer, you know, never phones it in. That woman's incredible. She can do anything, and I'd watch it. She's so good.
Well, I know the thought of rockets taking off seems, you know, kind of an action-packed thing, but it isn't necessarily an action thriller. There's a lot of important dialogue, and as you mentioned, the acting going on. We had a caller call in and wanted us to ask you if, and this is a blind person, if there was enough there for them. And I know it's probably hard for you to say because you most likely watched it. You actually watched it, but do you think it would right. make sense? Some movies don't translate that well. Would this make sense to go and check it out, even if you can't see it?
I think the film makes sense because it does a very good job of setting up who each character is within its own universe. So that if you know visually, if there's an impairment there, and you want to know if you're going to follow along with this story, I think this film is one of those that you know I really did enjoy the script. And I felt like I was able to follow what was going on very easily. And I'm one who, you know, conversely, I always say, like, if a movie you can turn the sound off and just watch it and it sells itself, that's great. But if you're able to turn off the visuals and just hear it and you can follow along with a story, that's one to sit down and watch. And so I would definitely say that, yes, you could get a lot out of this film, especially, one, because the music's so good and it helps, you know, provide a good sense of tempo and where the story's going narratively. Two, all the performances are very interesting, unique, and solid, you know, throughout. All the scene work between characters, you're going to very much easily be able to tell who is whom. And they do use what feels like a lot of archive footage, and then they film some things and dress them up to look like they fit within the period to accompany archive footage. But for the most part, it's telling its story. Because, again, like when, you know, NASA back then when they were flying everything, they didn't have so many cameras all over the place to get live readouts like they do now. Everything was done through radio communications. You get a big amount of that, too, near the end and during their testing phases and things. So, yes, it does. It does take you along for the ride from an audio and a visual element on both ends.
Very high praise for Hidden Figures from our movie expert, Blake Stubbs, calling us from California. I know we're going to talk to you in future shows. We're going to break down some of these other movies, including Fences. We don't have time to do that today, but valuable stuff. So thanks so much for sharing the insight in there and getting people out. And think about this. There'll be people out there that are experts in math and science, maybe winning some kind of, you know, super award, maybe a Nobel Peace Prize or something based on your movie review. So Blake, high praise for you for weighing in on it.
Well, thank you guys for having me on, and I'm glad we got to talk about it. Go see this movie. It's very good.
And Blake, one last time, give your social media out so people can follow you, keep up with all your adventures.
Oh, yes. If you want to talk a little more Hidden Figures, if you want to talk movies in general, you can find me on Twitter very easily. Just look for @BlakeStubbs, BlakeStubbs, and we can hit up a good conversation and talk movies because I love doing it. And you know, for all the Hawks fans and Cubs fans out there, we can talk sports too.
Thanks,
Blake. Sounds good. Thanks, Blake.
Happy New Year. We'll talk to you soon.
You guys, Happy New Year. Have a good one.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, there'll be more. It's staying here on 720 WGN.
Got another thing coming.
It's Judas Priest.
That's right.
720 WGN, Dane Neal, Allstate Showcase Studio in Fort Patty on Pretty Late for another few minutes before we turn it over to Nick DiGilio and all the awesome things that he has in store for you. And Dino, you think about protection, security. I think we've had commercials here on WGN about the guard llama, right? Or LifeLock, you know, different ways you can protect certain, you know, different things in and around your life. But when you are a public figure, when you're royalty, you know, you have a security detail that is trying to follow, you know, your every move and protect you from, you know, I guess the forces of evil.
And that can happen. The queen nearly shot by one of her guards, according to this story. It says a former guardsman is told how he nearly shot the night-walking monarch after mistaking her for an intruder.
Was this at night? Was she out walking
around?
Yeah,
it was about 3 in the morning, it said. On one occasion, the Times reported the guardsman was patrolling inside the perimeter of the palace walls at 3 a.m. when he spotted a figure in the darkness. Thinking that he had come across an intruder, he shouted, "Who's that?" To his surprise, it was the queen.
What did she say? Oh, yo, it's the queen. Just me, the queen. Oh, but she's got the voice, right? Yeah. I forgot about that.
Bloody hell, your majesty. Well, he said, I nearly shot you, your majesty. that's quite all right.
That's what she said?
Yeah, she said, that's quite all right. Next time I'll ring through beforehand so you don't have to shoot me. Apparently she took it better than I would have taken.
Yeah, well, you think you'd be angry. But once you get up to about 90, you know, you figure. And plus, you understand that the heart is in the right place. And I'm sure even at 3 in the morning, what is she? She's probably in like a house dress or with some slippers. I'm not sure what she'd be wearing.
Yeah, it says here that she occasionally suffers from insomnia. And to combat it, she'll sometimes put on a Mac and walk around the palace grounds. So
what's a Mac?
That's got to be some sort of hat, I would imagine.
Oh, okay.
I'm not really sure. I don't know.
Some sort of royal headwear,
Big Mac, maybe? But apparently, the queen's a little bit more gracious than her son, Andrew, who in 2013 was also mistaken for an intruder, confronted by armed police as he walked around in the vast gardens. The police pulled out their guns and ordered the prince to put up your hands and get on the ground. The palace source quoted by the Express said, from what we've all heard, the Duke was absolutely livid and tore them off a strip.
is that the equivalent of give them what fur?
Apparently, yeah.
Wow, tore them off a strip.
Not sure what that's all about.
Well, but that's they're just doing their job.
Yeah, they're just right. I mean, they have to protect, you know, the royal family from anybody that's going to be wandering around there, including themselves.
We look at our indigenous situation in the Secret Service. You know, they've got to tackle you to protect you from a dangerous situation, they're going to do it.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And so you can't fault the guy for doing his job. Didn't sound like he got fired, so apparently everything was okay.
Yeah, would you rather have it the other way?
Well, right. And, you know, anybody just walks around, and next thing you know, someone gets shot.
Last time you told me to leave you alone. So then, boom, I guess
and look what happened.
Yep.
So we've got another story here. A man trying to hide arrest buys hundreds of newspapers. The owner of a weekly upstate New York newspaper says a man bought hundreds of copies in an unsuccessful effort to keep people from reading about his drunken driving arrest. State police arrested this gentleman, charged him with driving while intoxicated. They also charged him with refusing to be fingerprinted or photographed. They said he told troopers he didn't want his mugshot in the newspaper. So the 12,000 circulation Times of Wayne County said it obtained a mugshot from the county jail. It says it printed the mugshot and a story on New Year's Eve and published them both online. Newspaper owner and editor said the gentleman bought nearly 1,000 newsstand copies at $1.25 each, trying to prevent other people from seeing him getting a DUI.
I don't know if that is the best idea.
I mean,
yeah,
the circulation is 12,000. He's got a little more work to do there.
I think what you should probably do is that whatever.
Just don't drive while intoxicated.
Well, there you
apparently.
Go. Word to the wise. Right. So there's a sensible thing right there. But it just seems like there is no way for you to buy up all the newspapers.
couldn't even get around to get them all.
In your town, right.
You follow a delivery boy around. Hey, there's one. Go get that one.
I'm going to buy them all. Maybe just call the home office for the newspaper, you know, where the printer, and just say, like, hey, just drop them off here. I'm going to buy them all.
You got to cut that deal while things are going on, while you're getting arrested or something to stop that from happening, because it's too late when it gets, once it's printed and it's out there, it's all over.
You should probably, here's a way to kind of offset that is maybe take out an ad in that newspaper.
Sure.
That says something great about you.
I have a quick update about what a Mac is.
Okay.
Other than a type of computer.
Mac and cheese?
Do you know, I guessed it was headwear. Some kind of royal headwear. I think I saw a text about it, but go ahead, Tom, tell us.
It is another name for a raincoat. It's just kind of a, you know, British, an Anglicanism.
I think that's in a Beatles song, too. Yeah, I don't remember which one it is, but I'm pretty sure I've heard that term in one of their songs.
I wonder, what is a royal
raincoat? I think it's Penny Rain, or Penny Lane, Penny Rain. It's Penny Lane. It's in that song. There's about reaching for a Mac in the pouring rain.
So she's, okay. So
now I get it.
I have a lot more, I think, insight into the queen at this point. Number one, we know she's got insomnia, and I would recommend if she's listening, 38 states and Canada. Of course, the queen can listen at WGNradio.com and probably is.
I'll tune in next time.
Yeah, she's probably the one that called in and told Tom about the raincoat. It's a raincoat. So there you have that. As I would suggest that she watches some of those late night infomercials, because I had find when I you know, let's say I'll get home, I won't be able to go to bed right away. I'll be watching either Dr. Shabag and his amazing melon, his youth melon. It could be Tony Little and his gazelle.
You know, the fact that you know the names of the infomercials is a little frightening, but
they're on a lot. And then, or it could be one of those like Dateline ID where, you know, Bill Curtis is talking about.
I'm Bill Curtis, and I'm talking about a
recipe for murder. Right. So there's that. There's a lot of that stuff. Tom, what do you watch on television? Do you have a couple favorite shows? I know it's probably not your strange obsession where they're eating dryer sheets, but I got to tell you, it was strangely compelling.
I record those. I save those for later. But, I mean, I don't actually have cable. Like, I don't pay for cable. I just have Netflix and Hulu, I think.
Smart man. Yeah, I need to wean myself off of the cable I have at home right now.
Yeah. So I watch a lot of Bob Ross on Netflix. They've got Bob Ross on Netflix.
Is he a stand-up comedian?
No, you don't know who Bob... The painter. You know, the happy little trees.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, boy.
Here's a happy tree. Is he still working?
No, he's dead.
So he's got his own, like...
So it's a legacy of...
Yeah, it's...
Is he lying in state? Is that the channel? They just have a you know, like the eagle cam with the baby eagles in the nest? They just have just Bob Ross not moving so much.
I'm Bob Ross, and you're not. All right.
Well, he would teach you how to paint, you know? You know, he would show you how to make a cloud or... Was it always right? Trees and clouds, that's it.
Well, it's trees, clouds, mountains, frozen lakes, you know, really, really happy stuff.
Would he ever do clowns or anything like that?
Clowns?
God, I hope not.
I don't think that mixes in with what he just said.
Tom, do we have a break and then come back?
Nope, this is it.
Good. So, all right. So, well, those are the TV shows of the past where you had those instructional TV, you know, like this old house. I mean, I know we've got a lot on DIY and HGTV where they're showing people doing rentals, but they're mainly like entertainment vehicles. Whereas like a Bob Vila, there was no entertainment there. He was really just pulling up a wood floor.
That's right. Here it is, ripped up. And now we're going to put a new one in. There's a lot of shows on that you know, do it yourself, as you mentioned, and there's just too many to count.
You know, what's your favorite show? I know you watch the Cubs and then reruns of the Cubs, but...
Well, listen, outside of the Cubs, I don't know. There's a lot of different... I don't know if I really have one favorite. There's different times of the year when, you know, Billions was a show I enjoyed that was on recently, and the next season's coming up. I've got a couple, Ray Donovan was another one. I really enjoyed that show, but... You know, beyond those two, and then maybe House of Cards on Netflix when, you know, the next season comes out, I'll watch that. But other than that, it just, you know, I don't really have any other ones that stand out right now that I'm watching.
So many options. If you want to hear the voice doppelganger of John Fox, you go watch Storage Wars. He's on there right now. So follow me on Twitter at Dane Tonomo. And, of course, go to WGNRadio.com and WGN Plus for the Dane Neal Show.